And the Oscar goes to... It's a clean sweep. The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, Barry M. Osborne, Peter Jackson, and Fran Walsh producers.
This is the 11th Academy Award win tonight for The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, tying the record for most wins with the films Titanic and Ben-Hur.
And the Oscar goes to Crash.
Crash was nominated for 6 Academy Awards tonight, winning 3 for Film Editing, Original Screenplay, and Best Motion Picture.
And the Oscar goes to Titanic.
This is James Cameron's 3rd Academy Award of the evening, and the first for John Landau.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Real Talk, a movie podcast. We are your go-to source for ratings and recommendations of past and present films. I am your host, Wes Jones, podcasting from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Hey, this is Tommy, podcasting straight from Nashville, Tennessee.
The movie buddy Conway, podcasting from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Hey, Real Talk, we're back. In our Oscar episode that has long been promised is finally here. So if you remember a few months ago, really about 2 months ago, when we had our Oscar pre-cap predictions episode, and then we had our post-cap, we talked a lot about just different Oscar winners. I remember I talked specifically about Coda, and I absolutely destroyed it. And I think Gabe actually ended up agreeing with me about that movie and how it shouldn't have won Best Picture. But that's
actually not what happened at all.
What? That's another conversation. Wait a minute, Gabe, let me finish the intro.
I can't let you finish the intro if you're going to call me out.
You know, though, the thing is, hey, I'm already revealing on the episode, whatever. Gabe, I think I do appreciate about Tommy is knowing that this episode was coming. He did take the intervening 2 months to watch Coda and, you know, make an actual informed decision. That was good.
I'll leave that unless somebody picks it. I'll make that call. I'm not saying I have or have not.
Still to this day, Nathan, I have no idea what I'm doing arguing with T-Man about Coda. It's the most preposterous thing that I'm doing. I don't know why I'm doing it.
I don't need to watch it. I've seen you. Sometimes you just know a movie. Like, you know, when you watch a trailer, you're like, I get it. You know what? I get it. I don't need to see it.
You don't get it. You have no, I don't, I'm done.
I got it. I mean, I got it.
Okay.
That was like me and Skinamarink. Look straight forward. I got it.
I can't believe this started this way.
Got it. All right.
Can we start the record over again?
No. We'll leave all this in.
Undo.
We're going to leave all this in all our, see if we got any Coda fans out there that'll agree with you guys.
I'd say put it in the bloopers, but the whole episode usually ends up like a blooper. So
this one is going to be a lot of bloopers. I can't even, all right, let me just finish the intro real quick. So everybody remember, if you listen to those episodes, we were talking about how we wanted to go through our Best Picture winners and really talk about movies that we thought should have won. Some of the worst decisions of all time by the Academy, which if you follow the Oscars, there's been a lot, and maybe some of the best picture winners. And so that's exactly what we're going to do tonight. And we actually have our Oscar episodes back. We have the whole Oscar crew back in town tonight, and this is going to be a lot of fun, guys. So let's bring in the whole crew. We've got Nathan Bartlebaugh. Nathan from Phantom Galaxy. We already heard you speak here tonight. You already talked about Coda. No, I loved it. This was great. There are no rules. There are no rules, even though we pretend there are. Are you excited for tonight and talk about movies? Hopefully not Coda, though.
I am. I am excited for this. It's fun to talk the Oscar movies. And because there have been so many and so many years to talk about, we are only doing a portion of them. So, but I'm excited because this was the portion I was mostly around to actually be able to see some of them in the theater for.
Exactly. And we're going to get to the rules, exactly what we're going to do here in a minute. But Nathan's right. We're going to talk about mainly the more modern Best Picture winners. And hopefully if people like this episode, we can always go back in time to a prior era also. So also, we got Matt Hosley from the Lost Art of the Podcast. Matt, I know you've been doing some heavy-duty research on Best Picture winners recently. How are you doing tonight? Are you excited for the episode?
Well, I'm excited for the episode. I'm disappointed in ChatGPT, who has steered me wrong, and I ask a simple question, give me all the nominees for every year back to 1990, and it can't even do that correctly. But you know what it did?
Unbelievable.
So I just have to say, though, Coda, I'm going to defend it, but I love how Tommy has prejudged a movie he hasn't seen when it is universally loved. Everyone loves it, and he's like, yeah, I'm not interested. Everybody loves it.
People think this is a bit, too. People have come to me and like, is this Coda thing a bit? It's not a bit. Sometimes you just know.
How can it not be a bit? You hate it because
it is a bit.
You had to watch it on your phone.
No,
definition of a bit.
It's not a bit. What I'm saying is not a bit, guys. I promise.
Here's how the way this works. I think I've done the critic thing long enough that I believe it is. You watch the movie, then you form an opinion.
Oh, that's that. Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Really?
I mean, it seems seemingly in that order. That's the way I've always done it. Call me weird.
Here's an episode idea. We sit down and watch Coda and record the commentary as it goes with Tommy.
That's that would be a good episode.
And see how long he can stay in character.
That's coming. That's coming,
perfect,
guys.
Perfect hour and 40-minute episode.
Yeah. We're going to have to get the crew back together, the Oscar group.
Somehow Coda's an hour and 40 minutes, but our commentary will be 2 hours and 30 minutes.
Like, so many pauses. So many Coda pauses. You just have to keep pausing it. So before we get into kind of what we're doing in the episode, I do want to ask you guys, actually, wait a minute, didn't bring in Gabe. Gabe, sorry, Buddy Conway, get in here, man. I know you've already spoken a little bit. Are you excited for the movie or the episode tonight?
Listen, I'll forgive you. I had to break down the third barrier, you know, just to come in here because I can't, I don't even know why I argue. I'm excited. I was going to pick Coda for this episode. But guys, I decided to go with real talk, and I'm going to pick my real favorite movie and my real least favorite movie. And I didn't even include ones I hadn't seen, unlike Tommy does in his list for apparently no reason.
I don't know what is going on with this bash Tommy Coda thing tonight, but I'm just going to have to put an end to it. I don't know how, but I'm going to. So let's talk about Best Pictures then, because that's really what we're here for tonight. Now, as everybody knows that listened to our Oscar episodes, you know, we love the Oscars. We hate the Oscars. They're always making bad decisions, but we love them for it. And I don't think anything personifies that more than Best Pictures for the Oscars. Because if you really go through the list, it's kind of amazing how many years you're like, really? That movie won? And so it's just kind of humorous to me looking back at all. Now, there are some great movies that win, but you know, one of the things I've heard, this isn't going to be my idea, but I've heard this from other critics, is they think the Oscars should implement a 5-year rule, which is like you shouldn't nominate or vote on the Oscars until 5 years later, because then you might actually kind of have some, you know, circumstance about the year, because it just seems like everything gets very political and gets very race oriented that year. And it's usually not the best picture that wins. But that's just my 2 cents. I wanted to throw it out to the group. What do you all think when you think of the best picture winner of the Oscars? Like, what's really the first thing that comes to mind?
Are you talking about like an actual movie? Because to me, it's one of two things. It could be anything.
Like really kind of just what are your general feelings when you hear it? Think about
so
it.
So I think Best Picture should be a movie that either pushes the art of filmmaking forward or is so technically perfect and people-pleasing that you just can't ignore it. So like Top Gun Maverick, it didn't do anything new, but it did everything perfect and everyone loves it. So I would not have been mad if that one won. But then there's other movies that just push the art of filmmaking forward. Like we've never seen that before, like Everything Everywhere All at Once. Like nobody had seen anything like that. So To me, that is the best picture.
Those are great. Those are both great. I like both of those. But then how do you explain Coda winning? Because it doesn't do either of those things.
Hold on. Let me explain how.
Man, he got Coda, back into it just like that. We thought we'd be out of the pit, and we're back
We thought we were out, and he dug us right back in. But Coda is, like, just a simplistically beautiful film. Like, it didn't have to do any of that because it did what it did so perfectly. There's a scene, I cannot believe you haven't seen it, but there is a scene in Coda that is the best scene I've seen, maybe in any movie in the past 20 years. It was a scene where she sings and her parents come to watch her sing, and you see it from their perspective. I have never been watching a movie and just been like, wow. And I sat there and I paused it and just took the moment in. But Tommy can't because he just.
I think Coda falls into the first category of what Matt just presented. Yeah. But I think what Matt's presenting is the best case scenario. What we as like the fans or critics or whatever coming to this want to see in a best picture. When I think of best picture, I usually think of overrated or, you know, message film, important film. Like to me, more years than not, that's typically the one that usually crawls to the top. And it's maybe less so now. I think there was a point in time when a movie like Everything Everywhere never would have won the best picture. And there was probably a point in time when Coda, which has a little... I can see how it would appeal to the message or sort of important, voters. But both of those movies, I think, in some of these earlier decades we're going to look at tonight, like the 90s, I don't think they would have stood a chance to even be considered. I don't think even would have ever been nominated. There are many films like them that were totally ignored within that decade. So I think for me, some of the issue is when a movie, here's the problem with Best Picture. And I do think it's important that we recognize what came out that year. And that's the problem. And any of you guys who've done the thing where you go to a screening of a movie and then they want you to do a review shortly after, it's like, well, how do I do this? I don't have enough time to process it. I'm basically just replaying my initial reaction, which is not how I think of movies, you know, that I've seen 20 or 30 years ago. I look at them from different facets. There's not a lot of time, even within a year, to determine what's a movie going to look like 20 years from now. I think it's okay that these movies are snapshots of when they were released. But often what happens is, what I think you were alluding to, Tommy, is that sometimes it becomes about whatever hot point issue or what the temperature, the social temperature is at the time that, that causes some of these films to win. Or a movie comes along and we weren't expecting it, not because it's doing what Matt said, it's doing something we've never seen before, but it's doing something that's not what the other four or five or eight nominees are doing. And so in a way it wins because it looks unique, even though it sometimes is still a safe movie. There's a couple movies here. I think we maybe all be thinking about the same movies where it's like, oh, that looks unique from a distance. Yeah. But when you get up to it, you're like, oh, you're the same old stuff I always get.
Nathan, I mean, you make a good point about that. And I think really when it comes to the Oscars, especially Best Picture, it always amazes me that it's like one or two films always gets hot for some reason. And you never really know why. And then that movie just ends up winning Best Picture. And it's like, really? That movie won? And I'm sure we're going to talk about a couple. And some has to do with the famous Oscar political wrangling and the Oscar campaigning that, like, for instance, Harvey Weinstein, who is rotting in jail, thankfully now. But he and Miramax was known for Oscar campaigning. And they did a great job at it. And looking back at the movies that won Best Picture for them, nobody really is saying really those should have won Best Picture. They just had the best Picture campaign a lot of times. So that's what I meant by like it gets very political sometimes within the Academy itself. So I think those are great points. Gabe, what do you think?
Well, it's funny. Nathan said that about like right when you leave a film. Me and Tommy went and watched Don't Look Up, and all I could say when she asked me was like buzzwords. I was like, stupendous. fantastic. I was like, I like froze. And so I didn't, I was like, I haven't even really thought about it. I liked it. It was probably it. I was hoping it got stuck on the DVD because it would have been the dumbest review ever.
Gabe, I did that for years coming out, and they'd ask you every, not that, but they'd come out and ask you what it was. So I started to develop a line. They come out and ask, what did you think of that? And I'd say, of all the movies I've seen, that was the most recent, and just keep going.
Yeah, that's what I should do. Awesome. But no, my view on what I think of, what I feel like I should think of, is a movie that will be remembered through time by everybody that watches it. You know, there's lots of them that do win. Like, yeah. I'm weird. I like that Titanic one. I know that Tommy hates it, but it's a movie that will be remembered through time. That everybody that lots of people liked at that time. That's like a
bad movie, but it's a movie.
There you go. See, I knew we were going to get a little bit of fun on that comment, but it should be a beloved movie by all through time, or, you know, but we've been instead what we've gotten is this trend of, just artsy fartsy films lately. And it's kind of sucky. Cause I feel like it should be, you know,
yeah, definitely gotten worse. I feel like, Gabe,
it's starting to get a little better. That.
Well, but, and I think, but it's kind of like a chicken or egg thing. Is it the Academy's fault or is it the movie maker's fault for not making those movies that are considered like the mainstream crowd pleasers that can win the awards? I think it's a combination of both.
Well, I think what you're seeing now is there is more diversity just in types of movies that are getting nominated. They expanded the nominees, but also some of these movies, the only way an indie or artsy kind of movie, and I think, you know, I'm a person who will defend a certain number of artsy movies. And then when you have that kind of faux arty where I'm aiming for an award, you can usually smell that crap a mile away. Right. And it never stops stinking like ever.
But, well, it's the Oscar movie thing. You know, it even has a name for it, the Oscar movie.
But to Gabe's point, I think there is a place for these big sort of, and those are the kinds of movies that often got nominated and won in the past. It's just a big, really well done movie that is crowd pleasing and it's populist. And the interesting thing about Titanic, and I like Titanic, it's got a lot of issues, but it's got a lot of things it does well. I mean, that's kind of the James Cameron bag. But, you know, about 10 years ago, if you asked someone to give you their list of worst Oscar winners ever, maybe 10, maybe 15 years ago, Titanic would have probably been on that list. But I feel like over time, I don't hear people, and I don't think that it was particularly the movies that were nominated in 1997. There were better movies than Titanic. I don't know that we had a great, but we can talk about that later. But Titanic is a movie that I think is kind of, actually is, over time, has sort of retained a sense of, hey, this was a worthy movie. Not a, maybe not great in the all-time greats films, but as an entertainment, as a big classic old school kind of Hollywood movie, I think it actually has a better reputation now than it maybe did when people were angry because DiCaprio was cute and all the girls liked him, and, you know, and all the kind of goofiness that went on when Titanic first came out. But I think that movie's reputation has actually probably improved over the years.
It's like movies like, you know, like if you want to think back, like Casablanca, like I don't think you can ever sit down. I don't think you could sit down and make anybody watch Casablanca and then be like, man, that movie sucked. Or, you know, I know Wizard of Oz. I don't think Wizard of Oz won Best Picture. But if you sat down with somebody and watch Wizard of Oz, I don't think they'd be like, that was horrible. You know, I don't know. I feel like it's movies like that should be winning that everybody loves.
Right. Well, Gabe, I think you make a good point around the Academy has won some all-time great films have won Best Picture. Some all-time movies that are like, what the hell, have also won Best Picture. So
like an algorithm picked it.
It's like that movie won. But I do want to ask you guys another question is, does Best Picture, winning Best Picture or the Best Picture cat, does it mean anything to you? Do you think the general public, to moviegoers? What do you, and if it does, what do you think it does mean? And maybe, Matt, that's kind of getting to what you were saying earlier about these are the two types of things that a movie should win, you think?
I mean, yeah. I'll tell you what winning Best Picture means simply is that more people are going to rent it because they're like, well, that's the best picture of this year. That's, I don't have to go any further. Yeah.
And it's more likely that stuff made by the people that made it or similar pictures or pictures in the same sort of vein are more likely to be made. I think what it means is more upfront, like where the market may go or where, you know, what kind of films are going to be made. In the long term, I'm not sure how much it actually means because, as you know, even Gabe pointing out, like, Wizard of Oz didn't win Best Picture. You know, a lot of the movies we're talking about didn't win Best Picture. The movies that won Best Picture around the time that some of these classics that we talk about were out are movies that nobody remembers anymore. So I think it's more in the
what's it going to push Hollywood right, to do next?
Exactly. In the early, like right directly after the movie is won, I think that's when it has its most impact, in the here and now. Later on, we look back and we have our opinions on movies. But and Casablanca did happen to win, but there are years where great, amazing movies were out, and the movie that won, I could tell you the name, and you'd be like, what was that? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And so you all don't think necessarily from a historical perspective it necessarily has a lot of weight or value. It's more of in the moment, because Gabe, your point is correct. You know, a lot of times the Best Picture winner does get a bump at the box office. More people hear about it, know about it.
They put it back out in the theater. Yeah. More people will rent it. People will even judge that year based on the, I told you guys, what was the year? It was a while back. I don't remember what it was. Some movie was it was a movie that you liked. It was just like a couple years back. It was with the so dumb. I hated that movie. hold on.
Roma.
No.
Let's all try to guess what this
Mank.
Was.
Mank. No, it was really... the one with Sherlock in it. He was
Sherlock Holmes. Yeah, this
the No, Mr. that's Holmes. Not Sherlock Holmes. It wasn't nominated. It was
Sherlock the TV Power show of the on dog. BBC.
Yeah, like my parents, there was this
Sherlock Hound.
My mom was like, I've heard of Power of the Dog, you know, this podcast. And she sat down and watched Power of the Dog. And both of my parents were like, that was the best movie of this year. I don't need to see anything from this year. So I think it can hurt. I was like,
it can. Because if you think people are like, there's no good music on the radio, it's like, well, maybe not. But there's a lot of good music that you have to search for. And the same with movies. Don't let the mainstream award shows tell you what the best movie of the year is, because the best movie of the year is probably one that's not nominated.
Right.
For yeah, now you're really, and Matt, you're really good about doing that. Like in Love and Monsters, you know, that's one I wouldn't have discovered. But you recommended it as your favorite movie, I think, that year. I don't remember. But, I mean, like...
It wasn't my favorite, but it was... I mean, I did a review of it, and I thought it was great. And literally no one had ever heard of it before.
Me
and everybody that's watched it liked
that
it.
The sci-fi one at the apocalypse and all the giant creatures?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a great movie. Yeah, we championed that on Phantom Galaxy, too. We kind of discovered it in the middle of COVID. I'm like, this is great. This is what you want from this kind of a movie.
That's why it's critical for like us is we have a platform, you know, maybe 10 people listen, but us to recommend, because Matt's recommendation made me watch it and I saw a cool movie that I didn't see. But that's what basically these Best Picture nominees do.
Yeah. And I'll push back a little bit. I do think there is some historical significance to a movie winning Best Picture and being nominated. Maybe it's just me from a movie kinda like, buff standpoint. I like seeing what won Best Picture, and to me, it gives it a little more weight. It gives it a little more, I don't know, value or cachet. And those are the movies that stand up, maybe not even stand up, that's the wrong word. Those are the movies that end up people remembering and have some type of historical significance. So I think it does matter when a movie wins Best Picture. And it also matters when they choose the wrong movie, because then you get something to talk about. So that's why I love the Best Picture, and that's why I
sometimes
love
that's the case. Like, look at 1968 is the year that 2001: A Space Odyssey came out. Oliver won Best Picture in 1968.
Definitely not the Best Picture. Right?
Does anyone remember Oliver?
Never. But is it? It's also fun to talk about that. It's believe the Oscars, gave that movie the Best Picture.
For your film buff, for your film nerd, for your film historian, absolutely. And obviously we wouldn't be doing a podcast on it, because Real Talk never does podcasts about things that are insignificant. So there's some
purpose for it. There is value and weight.
We're significant.
Yes, we are
always
significant.
Important of the timely, important, meaningful.
I just hope this episode ages as well as Oliver has aged. So,
please, sir, could I have some more? That's all I know about that movie.
That's true, man. That's what people are going to be asking for when they hear this.
Except
episode.
He sings it in this version, Matt. He sings it.
Oh, I didn't know it was the musical.
It's a musical.
It's not very good. So, All right, guys, are you all ready to do our list then? I think we've, unless there's anything around the best picture.
Are we going through each year or are we just popping out titles? Or
What we're going to do, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Nathan, because the audience is probably like, what exactly are they even doing in this episode? So this is kind of the idea we had, is we are going to go round table and whoever's turn it is will say, you know, they've got one of two choices and they're going to do both. So it's really up to you all if you want to do the best or worst first. And you either name what you think is the worst best picture winner of the last 33 years or the best picture winner. And then you need to defend your pick and we can all either, you know, agree or disagree, talk about it and just have some fun with that pick. And so we both get. So there's going to be eight movies that we talk about in total. We don't know what any of us are going to pick. So if somebody takes your pick, just move down to your other pick the next. And like I said, it's up to you if you want to go with the worst or best at first. And then what I figured what we could do is at the end, let's all just vote. And we say, okay, here is of everything that was nominated, here was the best and the worst from the group that we selected. Now, as we go through the list, also, if you all don't mind, tell us the year that it was nominated or won, and also the other nominees from that year, just so everybody kind of has a general idea of what the best picture race looked like that year. So any questions, thoughts, feedback from that, and kind of what our challenge is tonight?
Let's do it.
Let's roll. All right, so let's go with our two guests first. Matt, I'm going to roll with you first, man. Give us either your worst best picture winner or best picture winner. And remember, this is since 1990. We decided to do it in our lifetime just to make it a little more modern and current.
Yeah, I'm going to start with the worst best picture winner. And I promise this is not recency biased? Yeah, I got to go with Nomadland. That movie did
nothing.
Nice pick. Nothing. So first off, I know this is subjective, but
hey Matt,
I thought
real quick,
it was very boring.
Yeah, give us the other year. Nominees from that year and the year.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. It won in 2020. So I think that means it was a 2019 film. Is that right?
Yes, that is right.
Yep. The other nominees that year were The Father, Judas and the Black Messiah, Mank, Minari, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, in the Trial of the Chicago 7.
Whoa, so, that year is bad.
Yeah,
and actually, that list of movies are the 2020 movies. Like those movies.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Out in
you're right.
No, that's fine. I was just pointing out that because Thank it is you. The COVID year. So
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
you're right. So it is the 2021 Oscars, but 2020 movies. But yeah, that list of movies of all of those, Promising Young Woman and Sound of Metal, I would watch again. The others, I could take or leave. But Nomadland was my least favorite of those picks. And it was one, it doesn't do either of the two things I say a best picture should do. It does not push the art of filmmaking forward, and it is not universally loved. I think Gabe, you're the only person I've ever met who said they kind of liked it. My dad watched it because it won, because he's won. He doesn't follow movies a lot, but best picture, it's on Hulu. I'll watch it. And I asked him what he thought, and he goes, well, I've seen Frances McDormand shit in a bucket. That was his only comment on the movie.
That should be on the poster.
Yeah. I've seen
Frances McDormand work at Amazon and live in a van.
Yeah. But I mean, it didn't even feel like the story was like that. It wasn't like part of the zeitgeist. I mean, it was this woman who lost her job and then went on a cross country trip. It did nothing for me at all.
Matt,
so
that, I don't know. That is such a good pick. And I'll tell you why I agree with that pick so much. Is Nomadland is the epitome of this Oscar movie virus that has somehow infected the Oscars over the past 10 to 15, 20 years, where it's some supposed like important story, not saying that whatever Nomadland was talking about was not important, just saying that that's what all they want. I think it's Bill Maher who says the Oscars should just change their name to Most Worthy now. It's always some issue, so it's an issue movie. It's always some independent film, and it's always boring as hell. I tried to watch, I did watch Nomadland. I think I fell asleep 8 times in the movie. It is so boring. 8 times. The plot goes nowhere. And the movie's just mostly about nothing. I mean, it is an issue movie, so you could say it's about something, but it's not. I don't think it's really about anything ultimately.
Tommy,
so,
wait. You fell. I think you're exactly asleep right. You fell asleep 8 times in the same setting. You might have narcolepsy.
No, I have
keeping hash marks like they do when you're in prison.
That may be true. And this is only like over an hour and 45 minute movie.
You might want to get like checked out.
Scratching it into the couch arm.
Putting my medical conditions aside, I mean, that movie is boring as hell. That movie will go down as nobody's ever going to think about that movie again. I think that's where the Oscars have to be careful.
It was a black hole movie for a black hole year. Let's face
Listen,
it.
Listen, guys, y'all are all bashing it. You weren't in the right frame of mind. When you're going to be artsy, you got to go all artsy. You got to sit down, have yourself a cup of tea ready. You can't be drinking water or Gatorade or Monster Energy drinks. You got to be having
a absinthe, pure absinthe.
You've got to look down. As soon as you see it, you've got to blog about it and look down on others that don't understand it like you did. And so basically that's what I do to
Finally,
you guys.
You have become a true critic.
Yeah, you are a critic, Gabe.
You have arrived.
Let me
Your
tell you.
Training is complete.
Reach the upper sound, existence, a new plane of existence.
The scenery.
Existence.
Embrace the dark side.
It was just a beautiful movie. And it did it with basically nothing. Frances McDormand, you know, taking a dump in a bucket. And it was still beautiful.
So, Gabe, you think you really do think it should have won that year?
No, if I'm being honest, I agree with Matt. If I ever watched any of those again, yeah, it would be Sound of Metal, Promising Young Woman, or Trial of Chicago 7. Even though I defended it, like
Minari was a good movie too, but it's kind of
Minari
would forgettable a few years later.
It was a very bad year. But is there any comment on kind of what I was talking about, where the Oscars have to be careful about these movies they're giving Best Picture that are like small independent nothing movies?
Go ahead, Gabe.
Well, like you said, Tommy, about that, when it will correct itself, because like these artsy fartsy films, they're not going to be made anymore because they're all bombing. And so
that's true.
It's cyclical. If these keep winning,
nobody is watching these movies. Nobody.
But it's odd because you go make a movie like Nomadland and we talked about what is the direct effect of this. So director of Nomadland gets they get to make a Marvel movie, Eternals, a 3-hour boring Marvel movie. So there's your prize. But you know, the message movies, the funny part is some of the two of the movies that we've mentioned, or the three that we mentioned, say, hey, I would watch them again. And I honestly loved Promising Young Woman. I thought it was the best of the movies there. That is a timely movie with a social message, but it's done in a very entertaining way, I thought. I thought that it was compelling and it was interesting, and it never lost sight of this is a movie. It's here to entertain you as well. And I don't mind. I mean, we've been going back and forth on, Messenger and mentioning that my love for something like Tree of Life. Those are different kinds of movies. I just didn't think Nomadland seemed like the sort of safe choice that nobody was going to argue about. But A, nobody was ever going to talk about either. So 2020 was just off, I think, in a lot of ways. And I think they looked around and scattered, and they couldn't in good conscience nominate Monster Hunter, so they had to go with Nomadland.
Maybe they should have. But to your point, Nathan, the kind of what we've talked about, and one of my big arguments over the past year has been Hollywood needs to relearn how to make entertaining movies, and the Oscars also need to relearn how to nominate and award entertaining movies. Because at the end of the day, that's what movies are there for. I'm all for movies that like serve a higher purpose, but it should also entertain. It should also have cinematic value, and I just don't think No Man's Land did. And to Gabe, your point, you're right. These independent films have been an utter wasteland the past 5 years at the box office. The Oscar movie is going out of style, I think, and you're not going to see those much anymore.
The only time it makes me mad is when it ruins the year for other people. Like I told you, the only reason that makes me mad is like the year that Power of the Dog was up and it was supposed to win and my parents watched it. Well, that's the best movie this year. I don't want people to run from movies. So that's the only reason I would be upset. But I mean, also you guys need to learn to sit and drink tea and watch movies and be pompous about them.
I'm
so,
all about that. I could do that.
I don't even think
Nomadland is the worst movie. It's kind of a nothing movie.
It's a nothing movie, and it's a great first pick. I really like that one. So, Let's move on then to Nathan. Nathan, your pick.
Pick and make people angry.
For your best or your worst. Let's make some people angry. Let's go.
I doubt that I will. I will do worst, and I've been throwing some titles around in the messenger, but I don't think there's a couple here. We talked about the idea of worst sometimes being here's the movie compared to everything else that was nominated. But I'm just going to go with a movie that I like absolutely the least of any of the movies that have been nominated since 1993, or that won since 1990, not 93.
Yeah.
And that's American Beauty in 1999.
Ah, good pick. That's an interesting pick.
Is it a current pick, or have you always hated it?
Oh, from the very beginning. And I'll tell you why. And I even that same year, a lot of times I'll see a movie and it'll be another movie around the same time. There's a direct sort of rebuff of it. And you're like, and that movie's nowhere to be seen on the nominated list. So I'll read the nominees. Now, the thing is, I don't think this was a great list of nominees this year in 1999, which is weird because there were a lot of really good movies that came in 99. Not a single one of them is on this list.
I was going to say 99 is considered one of the best movie years.
Well, there were great movies, Being John Malkovich. I could go on and on with titles, but here's what got nominated. American Beauty, The Cider House Rules, which is a worse movie than American Beauty.
What
the
world?
In my opinion. The Green Mile
is pretty good.
Green Mile's a good movie.
Love The Green Mile.
Yeah, The Green Mile's good. That's probably The Green Mile. The next three, I think, are good movies, but they just aren't, to me, the top of that year. The Green Mile, The Insider, Michael Mann movie.
Now, Insider is fantastic.
Yeah, it's a good movie. It's probably the best of the movies on the list. And the Sixth Sense, which is good. Played out now, but it's a great movie, too. But they're just, when you look at them compared to, like, what else was out in 99, I mean, why couldn't they have nominated a movie like The Matrix? They would do that now. They wouldn't they do that should've. In 1999.
Yes. It will hold up the best.
Yeah.
If it won, and we were looking at this last list now, we'd be like, that makes sense.
Yeah. These other movies are good movies. I like them. I own those last three I mentioned, but I wouldn't touch these others with a 10-foot pole. American Beauty, my issue with it is it came off so incredibly smug. And I mean that, and like, and Matt, I was like just 20 maybe when the film came out. So I was in that sort of give me a highfalutin takedown of the suburban working class or whatever. And I went into that movie and I just felt smug and insincere from frame one. It had great acting. And that great acting, I think, is what they honed in on. But I think Sam Mendes is a very good director. He's directed plenty of good movies since then. But it felt very stagey. It didn't feel
sincere. He's very hit and miss.
It felt like fish in a barrel. There were moments that worked, and there were moments that felt phony. They felt like an alien looking at the common person saying, well, this is the problem. It was Hollywood looking at your traditional lifestyle and saying, here's the problems, and this is what's wrong. And I just think that mindset felt very haughty when I watched it. The same year, a movie that did the opposite, that put Hollywood in the trigger hair, so to speak, was Magnolia, and I thought Magnolia was a fantastic movie. Now,
much better, yeah.
It's more challenging. It's more interesting. It does to me. I know there's people who disagree. In my mind, it does the things Matt just mentioned. It moved the art forward. It gave me some things in structure that I had not seen before in that type of film, that sort of slice of life. I mean, there's a rain of frogs in the middle of that movie, and or maybe in the last third of that film. And I don't think it disrupts anything except in a positive cinematic way. But American Beauty, to me, it didn't feel sincere. And it felt like the kind of movie that wanted to look edgy when there were so many really audacious films that came out in 99. Like I say, Being John Malkovich, I would have nominated Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut, all these movies before American Beauty, which felt like a very pat. Look at these people in their nice houses, but their lives are empty and terrible. And there's Kevin Spacey masturbating in the shower, thinking about his daughter. You know, but I don't know anybody. I know about suburban disillusionment, and I knew about it even then. And I saw that in my parents and people around me, but it didn't look like that. And it just felt smug and insincere.
Hey, Nathan, it's a good pick. And here's the thing about the American Beauty. I want to get your thoughts or everybody's thoughts on it, really, is like, I think American Beauty is an example of kind of what we were talking about earlier with the Oscars, where a movie just gets hot. And for whatever reason, that's the movie the Academy latches onto. And it's like, they think that's the movie that should win. And it just rides this hot streak all the way to the end, even though maybe 10, 15, 20 years later, it doesn't really hold up. And I think American Beauty is an example of that. Of in the moment, it was a thing. Like, it was a big hit. Kevin Spacey won Best Actor. Like, people liked it. But now it just doesn't hold up as well. And I think it really is that thing that happens a lot of times where you can't predict it. Just for whatever reason, that's the movie that gets hot. And it also doesn't help that Kevin Spacey's in it, who has been canceled.
And I'm not holding that against like the film, but I know what you mean. But yeah, I'm saying I never cared.
Leaves a weird thing, but I do think Gabe, he was on your list, right, of favorite actors.
Honestly, Kevin Spacey is fantastic in that movie. I was thinking while you were talking, I was like, man, Kevin Spacey is awesome in that movie. But I'm irritated with you and for doing that to me. And B, I knew you were going to try to get me canceled again. And well, for Nathan,
it's not my fault that you had like five canceled actors on your list. And you
listen,
just said,
I pick based on performance. I don't care if you've been canceled or you've, or I don't care if it's not a popular opinion. I pick based on
his performance is why that movie won. His performance, let's face it, everything stripped away, his performance in that film is very, very good.
Very good.
And it's why the rest of it snuck through.
Yes, because the rest of it is, what I'm mad at Nathan is, because now I have to pivot on my worst movie, which is fine, because it'll be fun, because that was my pick, you jerkwad. No, I'm just kidding. But I was talk about how, like, but I mean, seriously, Sixth Sense or Green Mile, those will be remembered.
You know a better movie about being disillusioned and thinking, hey, maybe I should do something else and maybe I missed my calling in life? How about Toy Story 2 this year?
Classic movie. There's so many great movies in 1999 that should have won over American. I think that also hurts American Beauty is that it won in a historically great year and people look down on it for that. It's like, wait a minute, that's the movie that won in 1999? That doesn't make any sense.
My pick would have been The Insider, followed by probably The Sixth Sense or The Green Mile.
I've heard Matt confess his love for The Green Mile a lot.
Yeah, but you know what, though? American Beauty, at the time it came out, I would have told you it was my all-time favorite movie. I watched it again probably five
that's
years ago.
What I'm talking
and I'm like,
about, yeah.
This did not hold up. And it was because I was looking at it through the current lens of Kevin Spacey really is a creep.
Yeah.
And seeing how he acted. But I that would not have been in my
what
top
about
10
that,
of worst picks, I don't think.
What about that plastic bag floating in the wind?
See, but that's screenwriting. Like, look at this. It represents God. It's a brick in a bag.
That is so bad. Oh, geez.
I
want
to see it hit someone in the head.
It's amazing.
So, Wes, I saw you join us here. Wes, we got to get your thoughts. Thanks for joining us. What are your thoughts on American Beauty? That was Nathan's pick for worst.
Oh, worst like period?
Yeah. No, worst winner.
Since 1990.
Since 1990.
Oh, man. I don't agree with that at all. I think.
Oh, Wes is all right. Wes likes canceled movies. Come on in here. Give us your thoughts.
Well, I was going to say
look at this
as
a canceled movie. This has been I held this feeling. I wrote a review 2 weeks after this movie came out, and I gave it like 1.5 stars. So.
So you've been a hater since the start.
Well, I own this hate. True.
That's what I find interesting about American Beauty. I think there are some people like that, but I think it's more common for people like me or Matt who liked it at first. But then I just don't think it holds up. I just think it's kind of
the Emperor has no clothes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Didn't hold up.
I mean, that's you kind of team in what I was gonna pop in and say, you literally took the words right out of my mouth. I was gonna say the main problem I have now with American Beauty is not that I don't like the movie, because the last time I watched it within the last 5 years, it was all right. I still enjoyed a lot of it. Though I do hear some of the points that y'all are currently making. But 1999, if you're to make a list of best years of film in history, it's up there. Like, 1999 was amazing. And there were so many other films in a lot of different genres that are going to be talked about, I mean, maybe forever, for years and years to come. I mean, The Matrix came out in 99. Blair Witch Project came out in 99. You guys have mentioned Insider, The Sixth Sense. You've talked about, the other nominees. And it's just
The Mummy.
Whenever you The Mummy. Maybe the greatest movie ever.
Bats and Lake Placid.
And Lake Placid. Heck yeah. Little Betty White feeding alligators.
Supporting actors. Why not?
When you do that, and when you compare it to that year when it came out, it's like it's not even in the top 20 of best movies from that year. And so that that kind of makes me sour on it a little bit as the years go as well. But one other thing I was going to say, and when you started bringing up our best actors, is that I read out a combined list, right, of all three of ours. Kevin Spacey was number 11, and Armie Hammer was number 12 on Gabe's list.
Gabe!
I wanted freaks. To put what Armie Hammer say? Up at number two,
Gabe,
but I got
nervous.
Gabe
does like some freaks. Let the freak flag fly high, Gabe.
Moving Armie Hammer, wow. Gotta eat people.
Armie gotta eat people. Oh, my God. That is amazing. Good. I'm glad to see Wes. We need you in here to give us that perspective on Gabe's list. That's great. All right.
That's the only reason I popped on. I just came.
Just to point that out.
Just to point
Gabe,
that out.
Gabe's freaky list.
Son of a,
no. Gabe, we want to hear more about your freaky list as we continue on. All right.
I'll tell you that much.
Let's continue on to the next. So we've got next. All right. So, Wes, since you were joining us, let's go with you next. We have
popped on to say that, I think.
He's already gone.
No, I'm still here.
Wes is still here. He's in it for the long haul, at least for this next pick. Wes, tell us so what we're doing is either your best. So we've had two of their worst. So your either favorite best picture since 1990 or what do you think is the worst? And the two picks we've had so far is No Man's Land for worst and then American Beauty for worst. So you can do either best or worst.
There's a lot still on the list. A
lot on the table.
Yeah, I've got it pulled up here, and I was looking through to see. It's definitely not going to be anything from the early 90s. Every one of those movies are pretty good.
It's going to be something from the early 90s. At least for me.
Oh, I know it is for...
No. If we pick a movie for best, does that cancel it out so nobody can pick it as the worst?
No. Nice try.
I thought I would try. Let's go with, man, I really despise this movie simply because of why it won. And that's not really fair. Or I'm not why it won, who it beat. Gosh, The King's Speech is just screaming at me. I really do not like that movie because, gosh, it beating The Social Network just makes me just despise it. I mean, honestly, from all of these movies, and I only can pick one. Man, you shouldn't have went with me next.
Take a minute, Wes. So you just got
Let me take a minute. I got it down to three.
Gabe,
I got it down to three.
All right, Gabe, you go then. You go next.
All right, I'm gonna go with a little bit of a positive.
All right, go with best. We haven't had one of those yet.
I'm gonna go best. Y'all all went worst. I don't know. Maybe you guys are in a bad mood. So I'm going to go with a controversial pick, and I'm going to go with my real pick because I debated back and forth. I even called Tommy at lunch. I get so excited about these shows.
And Gabe, I was like, can I make a prediction real quick?
Yeah.
Can I make a prediction?
Yeah, go for it.
Is it Braveheart?
Yeah. What doesn't it have? Great score?
All right, Gabe. Absolutely. So 1995, right, for the 1995. Oscars.
Okay, the movies that came out that year. The only thing that stings me a bit is Apollo 13 came out that year, so tough break.
That should have won.
But it didn't. And Braveheart, and then also Babe, Postman. And
Why is Babe getting a Best Picture nomination?
Babe's my pick of these five movies.
No,
yeah, Babe is good.
It totally is.
Goodness.
George Miller can make a good movie. Mad Max and Babe. What do you want?
No, he didn't even direct it.
He didn't. He directed the sequel, which is even better. But
the sequel is better. It. All right, Gabe, sorry. Keep going.
You got to get out of that Babe wind tunnel down there, Tommy.
Pig.
All I'll say is, man, this movie had everything. And I didn't even know I was in a... You know, when I watched it on one of those tube TVs that I had in my room. I didn't know I was gonna cry it out that night, but I did, you know, during the torture scene. But it has one of the best scores, some beautiful scenery. I've heard all the things. Like, you can see the people fake swinging swords in the back and everything. But this movie pushed back. This was when Mel Gibson was at his prime. Would you give every day from this day until that to come back to this moment and say you can take our lives, but you can never take our freedom. Great speeches, great history. Some of it was a little off, no big deal. But, I mean, really just a fantastic movie. I don't know why people don't like it, and it was, and I just hate that it was in the year Apollo 13.
I back you on Braveheart. It's a great movie. I even with all the flaws and things to it, and the stuff that's the historical issues and stuff with it, as a swashbuckling sort of medieval adventure movie that was trying to have some kind of historical bent, and we had a lot of them this year. I actually think Rob Roy was maybe a little bit better than this one, but and it's way, way, way better than The First Knight. But I love Braveheart. Yeah.
First Night.
No, same First year. Night. They came out within like a month of each other.
That's
although
amazing.
I've seen First Night entirely too many times to admit, like on a podcast that I talk about films that I should recommend to you.
It's really bad. But I will say,
I think they got the Camelot and it looked like a screensaver. But anyway.
No, I think this is a good pick, Gabe. I think this is one of those movies that for whatever reason, the cultural elite in movie making, film Twitter, as I like to call it, they're probably not high on this movie. Probably has something to do with Mel Gibson being in it. But I think at the time, it was a big deal. And I think a lot of people really like it still. I think it's still a very popular movie. This is one of those mainstream Oscar winners that I feel like has vanished. And I wish we had more of like just a movie that everybody really likes. And it's
when those
really,
armies hit each other, you can feel it. Like,
yes,
this was when they really... The battle scenes in this are way better than most of the battle scenes in other films that came after it because there's the limit of how the CGI is used.
Yep. And they just don't make movies like this that with good battle scenes, with good, like, you know, just a good epic movie like that, with great scores, with good speeches written. They just don't do it right.
And great and supporting Matt, characters. Brendan Gleeson's character in this, he's great.
Oh, fantastic. But Matt, tell us why you hate Braveheart. Go ahead.
It's not that I hate it. I've only seen it once, and it just didn't leave an impression on me. This is not really my genre, though, so I'm not going to bash on your favorite, Gabe, because I know how much you love it. I do need to watch it again because I saw it. Well, here's the short story. We got a PlayStation 2 for Christmas the year they came out. I worked at Sears, and I was able to sneak one, you know, and purchase it. And on Christmas Eve, my dad went and rented two movies to see on new DVD quality. And it was nice. Braveheart and Starship Troopers. And
nice.
That's good.
Starship Troopers.
Starship cool Troopers that. At that time. I know I told you American Beauty was my favorite movie when it came out. Starship Troopers was my favorite movie before that.
That
so,
movie's awesome.
Why was that right. not nominated for Best
that
Picture 97?
It should have. Yeah, so I'm kind of... The only time I've seen it was after watching my favorite movie. So, like, it didn't shine as bright. So, I will give it another chance, Gabe.
Hey, Matt, I would say, look, when the very first time that I watched Braveheart as well, aside from a couple of the battle scenes, I wasn't really into the story as much. And I saw it back in the 90s. But for me, over the years, every time I watch Braveheart, I like it a little bit more and a little bit more. And so now I've seen it four or five times. It's like the last time I watched it was my most favorite time of seeing it. It has definitely grown on me. And I think you'll, especially compared to what we're getting these days, you will really appreciate the film.
Yeah. I will watch it again.
And this is a year where I would say, even though they're lesser movies, I think all five, the Postman and Sense and Sensibility, they're all five good movies in this case. Yeah. I'd watch all five of them again. Yeah.
Good year for movies. Those mid 90 years, if you really start looking at those, man, those movie years are stacked. It's just amazing how great those years were.
I hate they overlooked Waterworld, but that's okay.
No.
Me
Waterworld.
Too.
Guys, I tried to
talk
watch
some Costner.
I'm not joking. I know this is going to sound like a bit. It's not, I swear. I've been trying to rewatch Waterworld on streaming. That movie's so bad. Like, I don't think
you're really too out on the fringe by saying that.
I don't think
like
you're in the right frame of mind.
Lot, but
he needs to drink some tea or some pee. he's trying to stream the movie.
You have to have a nice warm glass of urine and sit down to watch that bad boy.
Oh, no.
You all ever have
it's
a
refined like this film.
Gabe, you'll appreciate this. If you ever have a stupid thought when you're like laying in bed at night, and I had this thought because I always drink tea at night, and I just thought my PMT becomes my AMP.
That is truly
That's
weird.
That's the best thing I've heard on the show.
All right, we've got to move on from that.
That seems like something you try to teach people. You know, like
all right, we can just end the episode.
A rhyme from children in elementary school. Just remember, kids.
PM is nighttime.
Yeah. That's a good way to remember nighttime. You could teach children with that line.
Yeah. There you go.
All right, so I'm just going to say that just didn't happen.
It doesn't get better than that this episode. Nothing will top that.
My final thing on Braveheart real quick is for somehow, like it came, for some people it was overrated at the time, I think. And somehow it's like become underrated in a way. So I just find that interesting how movies can have this like life cycle.
That's another one where Mad Mel has sort of maybe had a, you know, to me, it's just more authentic. It's like, see, he really is William Wallace.
Yeah, I think his roles become even more authentic to your point. Because he always plays crazy people. Yeah. That's just his role.
Right, Lethal Weapon. I mean, his claim to fame is Mad Max. It's in the title.
Exactly.
The only two people I've heard that really don't like that movie are Matt, and there was this one kid in my class, and I won't name names since, you know, they can't defend themselves on here, that pointed out the scene, look, where they're not even hitting swords in the background. And it's so stupid. And I was like, but that doesn't make the movie bad just because two extras are back there. Right.
And I don't think this movie is really egregious on that front. Like a movie like Gettysburg, where the reenactors are like, look, they're eating a Subway sandwich, you know, like that. I'm joking. But
I was like,
yeah, really? Braveheart was pretty good in its battle scenes. I mean,
and it was pre-CGI. Well, they just didn't do a lot of CGI.
Right. You don't look back there and see the same 10 guys walking in lockstep because they're computer graphics.
No, but I think it's a really good pick, Gabe, and glad we could talk about that one. Because, you know, these are movies, and that's why this episode's fun. These are a lot of movies that we just really haven't been able to talk about for whatever reason. So it's good to talk about it again. So, all right, so let's move on, Wes. Hopefully you've had enough time now. What's your pick? You're on the clock.
I've got my pick now. The pick is in, and I got to say, we're talking about 95, a movie that should have been nominated, one of my all-time favorite movies, Seven. The Academy loves movies like Seven, right?
No.
So the opposite.
But you're right. I agree, Wes.
Yeah, that's my favorite movie of 95. But, yeah, so, and just go ahead and cancel me right now because I know it's coming. But it's not so much that this movie was a bad movie, but it represents everything that I kind of despise about the Academy now. And honestly, why I stopped watching the Oscars. And I got to go with 2017's winner, Moonlight. And the reason I'm going with Moonlight is because that was actually, you guys know I'm not really big, and the audience knows I'm not really big on most of today's movies. This was a good year for movies. La La Land, which probably should have won. The last movie that made me cry, Lion. Arrival. Hell or High Water, like Hacksaw Ridge. I mean, even Manchester by the Sea, I really appreciated it as well. But Moonlight, what a pretentious film. Beautifully shot. It looks beautiful. But then it's what the critics in Hollywood and mainstream media with Oscar winners has done to Moonlight since then. I read an article of the best pictures of all time, which would include Casablanca, The Godfather, and a bunch of the movies we're talking about tonight. It was the number two ranked best picture of all time.
Wes is like, it's number two, all right.
And I just can't get behind that. The movie was fine. And again, I watched it, and after it was over, I was like, yeah, whatever. It was just kind of like, okay, that was a movie. But
I agree.
I just hate all of the stuff that is surrounding it. And again, nothing against the director and the actors of Moonlight. It's just, it represents what I despise so much about Hollywood.
So, Wes, I've got to jump in here. Because first, you are getting canceled. You are correct.
Yeah. And that's
Moonlight
fine. I'm
is the number one movie on film Twitter and in the film Twitter universe. Like,
oh, I guarantee
all the podcasts I listen to, they love Moonlight. like all the, like, I listen to a lot of movie podcasts. They're really big on Moonlight. A lot of them consider it to be one of the best picture winners of recent years. That is true. And I'm taking them as their word. Now, I know you view it from a, I think, more of a political lens of you don't want to be pushed that messaging upon you, but I take them at their word also that they truly believe that. But I do
the messaging, are we, because it was a like a pro-gay film, is that what we're looking at from the messaging standpoint?
Not so much because it was.
I'm sorry, I was just asking straight up.
No. I think it's a good question, and not so much of because it was pro-gay, because obviously just about every movie, you know, now has you know, gay characters in it. That's not the reason I did not like the film. Like I said, after I saw the movie, this was before it went like crazy as far as the reviews, and I watched it really, really early. Because I had heard some good stuff about it, and I actually, you know, the little early on demand, and I didn't know anything about it. I was just trying to watch it, you know, as many of the good movies, getting ready for Oscars and all that kind of stuff. And I watched it, and I was like, man, it was such a letdown. I thought it was going to be something else, and I thought it was going to be something, like, really great, according to all the reviews that I had read. It was the wildfire of the way everybody acts in this pedestal that they hold this film up on since its release that has drug it even further down. It went from like, well, I mean, that was just a movie, it was okay, to now it just represents something to me about Hollywood and what they try to do with these mediocre films acting like they're so great. That's it's not a messaging of the movie, it's the messaging of the media, the people that vote,
the importance of what the movie is saying trumps how well the movie was made, or whether it actually was as effective as it was trying to be, is what you're saying.
Right.
Like, because this movie chose to be about this subject matter, and it did it decently, it's best picture, whether or not it did it as well as it could be done. And and I agree with you there. I was just asking for clarification, so it didn't look like you were saying anything.
I do want to play devil's advocate for this a little bit, because I do think a movie like this does deserve a little bit of devil's advocacy. I think it is hard sometimes to, because I totally understand Wes's point that, you know, if you're getting pushed on a gender or messaging, it can feel like that's all the movie is. But then also you can say, okay, but look at it from the other side is, what if people do truly believe that? Like, there are people that just say, that is the movie I like, that is the movie I find. Because let's be honest, the Academy does nominate and award a lot of mediocre movies. And the way I look at Moonlight is, I've seen parts of it. I don't look at it any better or worse than a lot of these other mediocre movies that have won, like Nomadland.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of these recent winners, it's kind of the same conversation we had earlier, is the Academy has awarded a lot of these mediocre independent films, these small films that nobody really sees, as winners. I don't necessarily think that Moonlight is any better or worse than any of those others, but it definitely does have the film Twitter as a messaging device behind it. That is, that can't be argued. For sure.
And you may have made my point even better than I was trying to, T-Man, because that's exactly right. We're, it's held up on such a pedestal. And now if you look at all of these best picture lists, and it's now considered it, I saw it in probably five or six top 10 lists of all time best pictures. And so what that is, it's messaging to these independent filmmakers. Well, I want to be the next Moonlight. And what I'm saying is, no, like, there are so much other better movies that have come before. I'm tired of the Academy awarding these types of films that, honestly, I can't tell you anyone that I've talked to anytime recently is just sitting around. Yeah, I'm just sitting around watching Moonlight tonight.
Well, here's the thing.
You know what I'm saying?
What I find more interesting, honestly, is not the Academy with this. Because to me, this is just a movie that they've awarded a lot recently. Like we talked about Nomadland, it's very similar to me. What I find more interesting with Moonlight is film Twitter and a lot of the mainstream film universe really having Moonlight's back. So I find that an interesting phenomenon. I think there's multiple reasons for this, and we try to stay very apolitical on this show, so I don't want to get into all those reasonings. But I think it's a good pick, Wes, because exactly what we're talking about. It's a movie that is not really better or worse than a lot of these other picks, but for some reason it is held to a high pedestal.
And if, I guess to offer a true devil's advocate, an opposing view, not that I think it's the best movie of this list. I did think it was pretty good, but I was still reviewing movies at this time where it was sending me the screeners and stuff like that. And you guys know how this goes. You get a lot all at once and you watch a lot of movies. And I think, Wes, I was similar to you as I saw it and I moved on from it and was like, okay, that was good or that was fine. The performances and I think the way that the characters were presented is what kind of struck me, which maybe lifted it a little bit higher. But as an overall film, it didn't strike me as this is going on my best of the year list. And I think that when we watch a lot of movies, they have to stand out. They have to shine in some other way. When you get down to these five nominees and then whoever's voting looks at the five and says, well, okay, which one is getting what's the temperature right now in the room? Then the movie wins based upon that. I mean, I think everybody would have picked a different movie. A lot of people thought La La Land was going to win. I think they even announced it as the winner, right? And then
Warren Beatty did. Remember, yeah. He announced it. And that was another thing, too, because I was actually hoping La La Land would win because I really – I don't even like
for Arrival, but I didn't think Arrival was going to win by that point.
Right.
All I'll say about it real quick is the same people that like Moonlight, like Spotlight, like Nomadland, it's all in that vein. Tommy and I talked about when
Spotlight was awesome.
I like Spotlight, but
yeah.
But it's all in that vein where it got hoity-toity for a bit. And so, I don't care what a movie's message is. I don't care if it's Democratic. I don't care if it's Republican. Don't care if you want to talk about whatever you want to talk about. If it's a good movie, I can appreciate it, can like it. I just didn't like when it got artsy-fartsy, and that's all you had to do to win a best picture.
Matt, good points, Gabe. Matt, any last thoughts on Moonlight?
I feel the same way. I have no problem at all with the content of the film. I think it's an important message to be told. I just personally found the movie to be kind of boring. And it was not the best of the year.
The cinematography was fantastic.
Fantastic.
That message. Technical. Yeah. That message has been told in more audacious and better ways in other films.
Well, will say this.
That's probably my pick.
Real talk, we are going against the grain. We are going. Oh, that's hilarious. So, all right, guys.
Cancel yourself.
Team N's worst nightmare just happened. He was like, freaking Wes going to pick.
I knew. I was Moonlight really hoping.
Wes, you're getting cut out of this whole episode. So.
I was really hoping Wes wasn't going to pick Moonlight, and he did. I was like, well. And he picked it.
And the King's Speech was the other one. I whittled it down to those two.
Honestly, Wes, and I'll just be completely honest with you, you should have picked the King's Speech and Social Network, because Social Network really is, and most people I think agree with this, it is a defining movie in our age and era. Whereas the King's Speech is a good example of just another mediocre. Like, I like it, but it's a movie that has won a lot. Whereas the very cultural defining movie does not win, but goes on to have much more of a lasting impact.
But see, I thought we were going to do a segment later where we talked about the one that should have won that was going to be my pick.
No, well, I mean, that goes in with.
We don't know what we're doing, Wes.
That was, we really are lost.
No, that goes in with the best. You can say that with the worst pick. You say, well, this is what should have won instead. But it's fine. Either way, hey, we're making it through. It's going to be okay. So I'll go with my pick next, and this is going to be the best picture. I'll go with the best picture, and there's a lot of really good best pictures over the past 33 years, and I'm going to go with – let me see, make sure I have this year right, because I always get this year – the years confused.
Can I guess?
Schindler's List.
Can I guess?
Go ahead.
I guess Gabe's right. Let me see if I can guess yours. The Silence of the Lambs.
You got it. Silence of the Lambs. Wes is also guessing everybody's picks.
See, the audience is going to be really confused when you cut out my entire Moonlight thing and you just hear me guessing people's picks.
Right. Be like, what?
That's what he's here for, just clairvoyance.
So, and honestly, I was going between Schindler's List and Silence of the Lambs, but I think Silence of the Lambs is just probably the stronger movie just by a hair. And this is from 1991, so it's the 92 Oscars. And the nominees that year were The Silence of the Lambs, Beauty and the Beast, Bugsy, JFK, and Prince of Tides. So a couple of really good movies, a couple of movies like Bugsy, Prince of Tides, which I don't think really have any cultural relevance anymore.
Beauty and the Beast. Barely did in 91, Prince of Tides.
Yeah, that was a weird pick there. JFK was great then. It was a big deal then. I think it's still great. So
Beauty and the Beast is fantastic.
Yeah.
And Beauty and the Beast, yeah, that's still a great movie. I mean, that holds up.
If really there great. Wasn't something as good as Silence of the Lambs here, I would say I would love to see Beauty and the Beast win because it is an animated film and they don't and win.
Never and won.
It's one
yeah.
of the best ones.
It's a good point. And this year, I think Silence of the Lambs is just one of those defining movies that, I mean, we've talked about it on this podcast. I'm sure Matt and Nathan, you guys have talked about it. I mean, it's just one of those defining movies of the 90s. It's a five-star movie in every way. It was a huge hit. It's one of the only movies that won the Big Five, as they call it, Best Picture, Director, Actress, Actress, and Screenplay.
And Wes will appreciate this. It's one of the few that can be considered a horror movie, which never wins.
Exactly. It's Heck a thriller yeah. horror. And what, like I said, there's not much else to talk about with Silence of the Lambs, honestly, but it's just an amazing movie in every way. And it's one of those rare times. And that's why you got to love the Academy. It's one of those rare times when you're like, yeah, they got it right. It just happens so rarely. So it's like, oh, okay, they got it totally right that year.
I think this is a good example, too, of a movie, to go back to what Gabe had said, what's the importance of the best picture at the time. I think there are a lot of people who with no knowledge of the book and Manhunter and all that stuff, like my family, they didn't know what Silence of the Lambs was. Suddenly it's winning an Oscar, and then it kind of blew up even more so after that. You know, then everybody wanted to seek it out and find out what it was, who would probably not touched it, you know, otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. It crossed generations. It crossed, like, it became mainstream, even though the subject matter is not really mainstream at all. And
unless
it's
you're
very
Army
disturbing.
Hammer.
Yeah, unless you're Armie Hammer. That gave him inspiration.
It's kind of like Seven, honestly. Seven should have been nominated if Silence of the Lambs can be nominated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. But this is one of the rare times.
Seven, though. I agree putting it up there, but Silence is just, I don't know. It's better.
I'm
a Seven guy, but I think this is one of the rare times. Not only was it the best movie that was nominated and should have definitely deserved the award, I think it's the best movie of the year as well, of that particular year.
Yep.
There's no other movies that I can say, even that weren't nominated, hey, that's actually a better movie. It's a more enjoyable movie. This is, not only did it win Best Picture, it is the best from 1991.
That's what makes, yeah, absolutely. And that's
where so proud of his pick now.
I love, I'm so happy. I can't believe nobody else picked it. No, I love those years like this, and it happens so rarely, you got to like really appreciate it. And it's almost like somehow, and I know this is probably just me, but like for some reason, it even adds an extra element of greatness to the movie somehow. That like a movie that is like that, the best picture of the year, and it was the best picture truly of the year, and it won, and it just happened so rarely. Like, and honestly, the early 90s, they were really on a hit streak. You know, they had Schindler's List, they had Unforgiven. We'll talk about 1990 in a little bit, but for a few years
there,
they had
Dances with Wolves.
They had a few years there where they were really hot. So we'll get back to that. Hold your thoughts on that, Wes. So we've done the first round, and I think we all had really good picks. And let's go ahead and get into the second round then. And I know you guys, who'd we start out with? Matt, right?
Yep, with me. Is it me again?
It's you again.
Okay, so I did worse last time with Nomadland. So my best picture, and this was hard for me because there's a lot that I like. But there's one movie that I think should be required viewing for everyone, probably around seventh or eighth grade. And it's a movie that it's hard to watch. In fact, my wife told me, I watched it twice, and the second time was with her, and she got mad at me. She's like, I can't believe you watched this a second time. I will never watch this again. And it's 12 Years a Slave. And that is my pick. for, because it's culturally significant. The acting is incredible in it. It's telling a story that's true that we didn't know that makes.
Wait, Matt, is this your best or worst?
This is my best.
This is your best?
Yes. I love 12 Years a Slave.
Now T-Man's about to get himself canceled.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. We are touching all the soft spots. Wes is coming in here again. I'm the only one not getting canceled. Y'all are making
Wait a minute. This has nothing to do with cancel or not.
I'm the only real talk person not canceled.
Wait a minute. I just didn't realize Matt was. There is no way you're picking 12 Years a Slave as the best picture of the last 33 years.
I'm not saying that it's my favorite and the one I'm going to sit down with a bowl of popcorn and watch again. I'm thinking I think that it got it right, and it's one that everyone needs to see. I think Silence of the Lambs probably would have been my second pick.
Okay. All right.
But no, I just, this feels like, and I'm going to say Requiem for a Dream as well. They're movies that are hard to watch that every like preteen needs to see to know how bad things could get if we don't do things right going forward. Or, well, drugs, obviously, for the for the other movie. Yeah. But just like...
Or the past, right?
Yeah, or the past. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, to me, when Lincoln came out, I was so hype about it. Steven Spielberg, Daniel Day-Lewis, and I thought that movie... Well, see, I thought it was kind of boring, though.
Oh,
But no. 12 Years a Slave, yeah. I was, like, on the edge of my seat and, like... clutching my stomach because I was so devastated. There's so many scenes of that just like rip your heart out.
It is really good. It's a really well-made movie. I just don't it's just another one of these movies to me that is more of a like educational history. Like I talked about with the Oscars, they do a lot of like what's most worthy. It's almost like it's like a documentary or like they're trying to educate you versus entertain. I know it's not a subject matter that's supposed to be entertaining, but to me, it's just not... I don't know. It's not a movie that I would go back to and be like, yeah, let's check out 12 Years a Slave. I saw it once. It was good, but not a movie that I consider one of the best.
Yeah. No, don't get me wrong.
I'd watch it again.
Yeah. I don't know that I want to see it again because it is just so like, it's going to ruin your day. It's one of those movies that you watch it and you're like, okay.
But I think it was gut wrenching.
Go to a birthday party. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
No.
But dramatically speaking, I mean, I think it wasn't just a case of, here's a subject matter, because this is subject matter. I don't think, you know, trying to argue slavery is bad. You know, that's one of the problems with releasing a movie like this is, yes, we know that, we believe that. But 12 Years a Slave did some very interesting and I think truthful things. The difference between something like American Beauty and a movie like this is there are some scenes in there that are hurtful or hurt you as you're watching them because of how true they are. And in some ways are still true for certain outlooks and certain perspectives, because it wasn't simply showing you only one kind of person or only one kind of perspective. It was looking at an entire country that was dealing with this, and it was the issue of the day, and people had a lot of different responses to it. And you see that with within the film and how it affects people. And it was a grueling film to sit through, but I support that, Matt. I think it was a great movie, and it was probably the best movie of 2013.
Well, thank you, everybody, but Tommy.
especially hard to sit through it at the theater, which is where I saw it. Actually, got to see most of the Best Picture nominees from 2013-2014 Oscars for that particular year. And this is, of the slavery subject matter, this is definitely one of my favorite films from that. I think it is definitely the most impactful. The best acted. Really like this movie. The only thing I'm with T-Man as far as it's not, to me, it's not one of the best from the last 30 plus years. I mean, I actually, as far as, and I don't know, I would have to think about it a little bit more. It was definitely the most culturally significant when it came out in 2013. But I mean, Wolf of Wall Street, Captain Phillips, Her, Gravity, Dallas.
I love that Her got nominated for all of those. Sure.
You know, well, so if we're talking enjoyment, I also liked all of those more. And I guess I should name all. So it's 12 Years a Slave, American Hustle, Captain Phillips, Dallas Buyers Club, Gravity, Her, Nebraska, Philomena, and Wolf of Wall Street. And of those, Nebraska and Philomena, both of those made my best of the decade in the top 10. I love Nebraska and Philomena.
They're good. But, yeah, I like both.
And I think Her was actually my favorite. As I look at this list, I forgot Her was on my the top of my top 10. I didn't realize it got nominated for a Best Picture.
That's my favorite pretentious film ever. Is her.
I love that movie. You're right, because it sneaks up on you. It starts out and you're like, oh, really? And then by the end, you're like, oh, my gosh.
It makes you start questioning what's really love. It's crazy. Yeah. So.
Now, in the final thing I'll say about 12 Years a Slave is it's kind of like what we talked about. And I think that's one 12 Years a Slave is an epitome of why the last decade in Best Picture winners have been so weak, in my opinion, is they've turned it into the most worthy Oscar versus necessarily the Best Picture. It's, and I'm taking that from Bill Maher. I'll give him credit. He's been saying this for a while, so I'm stealing from him. Is like, the Oscars are now just like, what is your, like, cause? Like, what is the cause they're going for? And I know 12 Years a Slave is a very important issue, but it just seems like a lot of the movies that they have awarded has been just because of that, not necessarily versus the movie itself. So
we need to get back to important issues like cannibalism.
Exactly. There. Army Hammy. We just need Army voting more. We need his vote to weigh more.
Can we keep calling him Army Hammy? Because that's even funnier.
Army Hammy, that's good.
Hammy. All yeah. I will say, Matt, is of all the movies in the past 30 years, it's probably in the bottom nine of ones I would watch. However, it's the best at telling the slavery story. And
that is true.
So
an important subject.
I 100% agree with that statement. Yeah. And
the difference is the technical elements and the acting and the passion put into it. It's not a movie that's coasting off of a theme. It's not.
Interesting pick, Matt. I would not have picked. I
like that we got to do that.
Threw a curveball in there. That was good. All right. Excellent. So next we have Nathan. I think you're up with your best.
So it would have been. The truth is. And I mean this, in, you know, recency bias, everything aside, truthfully, it would be Everything Everywhere All at Once. That would be my
really?
Pick. And I would, yeah, honestly, but I no already way. Argued this. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I thought about it too. That was my.
Yeah. The most original, the most, all the things that.
Get out
Matt
of here.
Said, I agree.
I'm serious.
Absolutely. And when I saw that movie, I said to myself, this is going to be one of my favorite movies ever. I've watched that movie like 8 times. And I edited the parts involving the plugs and what out, but I showed it to my whole family, and they love it too. So I thought it fired on all the cylinders. It was thoughtful. It was interesting. It was visually great to look at and experience, but it also told a story that was human and endearing and made me think about things. But I already said all that. I would have done Silence of the Lambs. Here's a real curveball, and get my Oscar cred thrown out forever. But I'm going to go with 2003's Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King.
Okay.
That's a great
I love
pick.
That. What are you saying?
What
I
do
love
you mean?
That
yeah,
pick.
That's awesome.
So, I don't know. I'm not a Lord of the Rings fan, but
yeah,
I get
the books so many times, neither envisioned man. Them, tried to picture Good. What this would look like when it didn't look like crappy Rankin and Bass animation. And or that rotoscoping stuff that, that Bakshi did back in the 70s. But here's the thing about Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. I actually think Fellowship of the Ring is the best of the three films. But
yes, for sure.
Then the Academy clearly did the deal where they let two other mediocre movies from the previous 2 years win. Yeah. In the idea that, oh, we'll wait till the whole thing comes out. And I like that basically.
It was 11 for 11.
Yeah, yeah. And they basically let the entire, the entire population of New Zealand get up there on that stage. All those weird little people pushing their way past all these people in tuxes. It looked absolutely
amazing.
As Peter Jackson crawled over them like Bilbo looking for the ring to get up on stage.
That has got to be one of my favorite Oscar telecasts ever. Because Nathan, sorry to interrupt, but I just have to say, like, everything was about Lord of the Rings. There were so many New Zealand people winning. They yes. went 11 for 11. It was just an amazing night, and that's where, like, the Academy got it right. They should have waited. They want, like, that was a even if you don't love Lord of the Rings, like, people have to give them credit for what they did, the achievement, the, just for them doing three yeah. movies at once, and for them, it was just a moment, and I'm so glad it won.
But and my thing is, I was ready to go into the first. I was excited they did it, but I was also very trepidatious about it. I saw some of the early trailers and like some of the special effects look off. Now, to be fair, we hadn't had a big fantasy movie in years. The year before, because this came out around Christmas, the first one, Fellowship of the Ring. You know what fantasy movie we had directly the year before? That god awful Dungeons and Dragons movie where Jeremy Irons was wearing like blue lipstick.
Chris Klein.
Exactly. No, Chris Pine's in the new one.
Isn't Chris Klein?
Yeah, I think he is. Chris Klein. I remember that Marlon Wayans is playing the elf, and they keep shooting him from like a high angle, so he looks small.
That movie was awful, and I love those type of movies. But I agree with you, Nathan, except for this. So I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan. I love fantasy. I think it's one of the best trilogies ever, except for the last 37 minutes of Return of the King. It's almost unwatchable. The hobbits bouncing on the beds and
it's not that bad. The people in my theater did it, just leave
and pretend the movie ended 30 minutes earlier.
I love when they're bouncing on their bed. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's
ridiculously long.
It's not as long as you think it is.
I think it's 37 minutes. Go back and
watch. Not the bouncing on the bed.
No, I mean, there's bouncing.
When he's like, "You're my friends, you bow to no one."
Wait, all right, you got to tell me.
I challenge you.
When he's like, "Friends, you bow to no one." That scene is iconic.
Yeah, but it's like Star Wars. The A New Hope ends it right. It's like, boom, get your medal, movie over. Like they didn't get. They didn't.
The book had a whole nother act, so I mean, they had to cut it down.
Here's my argument for the endings. For some reason, and I agree that for most movies, you don't want a bunch of endings, but for Return of the King, I feel like it works because that trilogy is such a journey, and your heart's invested in it so much, you almost don't want it to end, and you need those like epilogues to say goodbye, basically.
Don't yell at me because it was my second choice to Braveheart. Yeah, I know. But I'm just saying it could have been the ultimate movie if they didn't have that last 30 minutes of hugging in it.
You need it. I need that bouncing on
you. Back. I mean, I don't need to be hugged by Hobbit.
So when I saw this the first night in the theaters, there's that scene where I guess this is spoilers, but whatever. But Frodo and Sam are there on the rock and they think that they've destroyed the ring. But they know they're not going to get away. Mount Doom is going to melt down and they're going to be in the middle of it. And he looks at him and he says, "I'm glad you're here with me at the end of all things." And it goes dark. The cook, I don't know what these people were thinking. A couple stood up and walked out of the theater. Like, can you imagine after three films thinking that was the end? And then suddenly he comes back in and you see the Eagles come in and they're like, "Oh, we better sit back down."
Still to this day, Nathan, they're telling people, like, "Man, remember when Frodo and Sam died?"
So my daughter, I took this is a side story, but whatever, it has to be told. I took my daughter to the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, my whole family, a few years back. It was actually right before COVID, and we went to they were doing E.T. With full orchestral accompaniment.
That would be cool,
She had never seen the movie before, and E.T. dies, and she fell asleep. And the next day, we wake up, and I was like, "Izzy, how'd you like the movie?" She goes, "It was so sad, Dad. E.T. died, and he's never coming back." And I was like, "Oh, God, you go to the couch right now. Let me go get the Blu-ray.
Let me turn it on." Yes. That's hilarious.
I hope you're right, Tommy. I hope those people thought that's how it ended. Nobody's ever corrected them their whole life on it. They're like walking around like in they'll interject in the middle of like a conversation. That Lord of the Rings, that was a really sad movie. And just nobody corrects them. And so they
let it be.
Just let it be.
Because I think this is the last thing I'll say, because Tolkien was writing a story that was as much about dealing with how do you deal once you've done this thing. You've done this thing. And everyone else, he came back from war and he had seen things that he couldn't express to everybody else. Everybody else is looking, you've given up all these things and you can't tell somebody about it. And they understand. Frodo's sitting there watching these guys freak out over a giant pumpkin. You know, they've come back from saving the entire Middle Earth. And 1 year later, they're upstaged by a pumpkin. You know, that's how things go in the Shire. And he's never going to fit in again. Like, you needed those things.
I agree. You needed those. You needed that catharsis at the end to let go of that journey and those characters. So Matt, Wes, any thoughts, pushback, agreement? What do y'all think? Return of the
King? No pushback. I saw all three Lord of the Rings movies one time each. It was the midnight showing.
Yeah, me too.
Midnight showing, opening night, midnight showing of all three. I went with a group of friends each time. And I've always liked the movies. It's just not my genre. Y'all know that. I don't get really enthusiastic about these fantasy films. And I'm just kind of like, should I watch them again? Maybe. I don't know. I just don't have a lot of motivation for it. And I was looking over the nominees for this year, and it's actually, I would have it fourth out of five. I like Master and Commander more, Mystic River more, and Lost in Translation more.
It's a good nominee year.
All these were good nominees. I like Strong Mystic year. River the least of the five, but it was fine.
Yeah, for me, again, kind of like Braveheart, I have no issues with the movie. It's just not really my genre. Same as Wes. Yeah. I've seen them all one time, probably opening weekend. It was not the midnight showing, definitely. But I do want to watch them again, but now there's six of them.
So don't worry about the Hobbit movies. You can skip the Hobbit movies.
Just skip the Hobbit movies.
That I will not ever do. So
I think the Hobbit movies are just something a lot of people pretend just didn't happen.
I saw them because I was reviewing movies at the time, and it's just a lot more. It's just a lot more, and it doesn't have – that's the problem is I think they did something very special when they made these, and they captured something that they weren't not – that Jackson, at least in his really big budget stuff – To be fair, I actually really like King Kong. I admit that. But I think that movie could be cut down a bit. But I don't think he never recaptured what they did here when they did the Hobbit films.
It's just kind of weird, honestly, if you think back like that. He came back, he did them. They made a lot of money, but they're just kind of like, nobody ever thinks about them. It's almost like they didn't happen. I kind of truly feel that way. It's like, wait a minute. Peter Jackson came back, did three Hobbit movies, and nobody cared about them? Yeah, that's happened.
Well, who's next?
Who is next? All right. I believe it is Gabe. Gabe, it's your turn.
Well, I'm debating what to do. I can't make myself be full T-Man. Like mine was stolen, obviously.
Is that an insult? Let
me tell you why. let me tell you what I want to pick. Actually, I'm just going to pick it. I'm going to become what I hate. in this podcast, I haven't finished this movie, but Nathan's, or I forgot who stole American Beauty. Somebody stole my pick. Yeah. You stole my pick. So, well, I'm going to go with Crash. I started it.
Oh, good pick. I can't believe we haven't talked about it yet.
So I'm everything I hate. I have not finished the movie. So that makes me, I've argued with T-Man about how preposterous this is. But, you know, there's a couple movies that I haven't finished. I didn't watch The Artist. And so I'm not going to post.
I saw 20 minutes of Roller Gator. I'm pretty sure I could tell you it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen without seeing all of it.
Well there you go. But I'll tell you, with Crash, I couldn't get into it. I tried. I tried to give it a chance. I think it was me and T-Man watching it together with Chuck at our apartment. Yeah.
Our friend Charles, Chuck, as we call him, he loves Crash. He still talks about it.
I don't see the appeal. I didn't watch the ending. A lot of Munich didn't win that year. I mean, Brokeback Mountain was a great movie. I didn't watch Capote, and I didn't watch Good Night Luck. So, but the other, I just, you know, it, crappy year for movies. Except
okay,
for
this was 2005 year, 2006 Oscars, right? Okay.
Yes, and I'm going with Crash, and I didn't see it.
It's a great pick because that movie is kind of, it honestly, I think, defines bad Best Picture winners. Like, I think if you ask people now in the general audience or consensus, Crash kind of is the one a lot of people will say because it is a bad movie. Like, it's really bad. And it's another one of these movies that's like kind of the cause movie. And in this one, it's Hollywood Ends Racism. And
this one, I agree with you. This is an example of let's just slap a subject matter together, get some actors and beat the same point over your head for 2 hours.
For 2 hours. And it also, like, kind of did the thing that was popular in the early 2000s where it was, like, the intersecting story montage kind of thing, like Traffic did. And, like, have them all connect in different ways with one central theme. But instead of, like, the drug war, they did racism. And it's just so sloppy and just so badly made. It's Paul Haggis. Like, he made it when he was a thing. He also got canceled recently. And I don't know. It's just really cheesy. Like, that's just the best way I can describe it. Like, it's just really, like, not well made at all. And it's a really good pick, Gay, because it's really bad.
Yeah, and you know I watched some of it because I watched it with you guys. I just, if a movie, like, that's the epitome. Like, I feel like I'd be lying to you guys if I picked, like, because I really like all the other movies. I like a lot of the other movies. Like, I feel like I would be lying to you if I picked something else, but I also feel like I'm becoming T-Man because I didn't finish it. Because I finished every other movie except for three.
Embrace it, Gay.
But that also says something. Like, I finished every other Best Picture winner except for three.
Well, and your friend who liked it comes to you and, like, let's watch this movie together. I usually feel compelled to finish a movie if a buddy says, hey, this is good, you know.
Correct. And we were doing it together. And if I can't finish the movie, because I finish everything.
So when you're doing it together, what happened? Did you just, like, leap out of the room after 20 minutes?
He lived across the hall.
Okay.
We had been having a couple beers, and I was just like, this is not worth my time. And I went back home and went to bed.
That's hilarious. I think, yeah, it's just one of the movies that's just kind of, like, taking out the Best Picture aspect of it. If you watched it, I just think it's boring. And to Gabe's
felt
point,
like a,
you know,
TV movie. I'll be honest. I'm just going to say it.
Absolutely.
But I felt like a TV movie.
That's it. That's exactly what it is.
You saying that, you know, about Gabe, like, what happened? You don't know Gabe very well, but he is a master of disappearance.
There's just like a straw man on the sitting on the couch with a smiley face drawn on it.
Yeah, it's like Gabe, he turned back around. You probably, like, gave that off. And you, what are you somehow thinking about this movie? I'm just gone.
And he touches it, and the head rolls off onto the floor.
I bet in my life 100 times I've been on the phone with Gabe, or I thought I was, and then I look down and he's not there.
He's just not there.
I just don't say bye.
And then, like, he'll come over, he's hanging out, you'll go outside to grab something, you come back in, he's gone.
But think about this,
so,
Wes. How
it doesn't surprise me.
Wes, I want you to follow me. How beautiful is that? If I never say goodbye, our conversation is always ongoing. That's how much I care about our friend.
It just never ends, right?
He shoots a grappling hook and just goes up the chimney.
I just don't want to ever end our conversation, Wes.
I don't know he's not there, though, Wes. Are you sure he hasn't, like, painted himself into the wall, like, you know, when a stranger calls or something?
Possibly.
But the biggest movie trope ever is that nobody ever says bye when they hang up the phone. And Gabe watches so many movies, I think it's just rubbed off on him.
He just believes that's the way you do things.
Yeah. But I got to step in here because I've been quiet, and I know you guys all know this. Now, I do not disagree with anything you've said about Crash. It should not have won Best Picture. It's cheesy. It is Hollywood ends racism. It feels like a TV movie. But for whatever reason, I really like it. I own it, and I always think to the scene where the guy from End of Watch, whose name's escaping me right now.
Michael Pena.
His daughter tries to protect him from getting shot because she has an imaginary bulletproof vest on. Gets me every time. I know that they telegraph it from a mile away, but it always gets me. But I do think Crash, Green Book, Driving Miss Daisy, they're kind of, and maybe even Dances with Wolves, are kind of all the same, like, genre of movie, which is white people are bad and then they have a revelation and then become good at the end. Was it the White Savior movie?
Yeah, that's a good one.
But yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with anything you guys say, but I just like it. So,
well,
sorry.
It's good to have that pushback.
No, I like to have that different opinion. Adverse opinion. And honestly, unlike T-Man, I'm not going to argue with you because I didn't finish it. I almost didn't finish a really good movie in Tar this year because the beginning was so boring to me. That's what happened with Crash. So I pick it.
Crash is really one I just don't care about. I just don't care about the movie one way or the other. I remember watching it and I just didn't like it, and I just forget it's a movie somehow until Charles Wilkins brings it up.
Yeah, and it's amazing.
I'm gonna finish Crash. I'm going to do it. Since Matt said he likes it, I will finish Crash. But, and if it's not on my list, I will recant it.
Gabe,
tell us, Gabe, your final verdict on it.
It doesn't get any better than what you've seen. I guarantee it. Like, it's the same. You're not going to like it.
No, I do appreciate it. Just remember, it's directed by David Cronenberg.
Yeah.
No, but I have admitted on this podcast, I will finish Crash and tell you my opinion on it in the very near future.
All right, that's
y'all are talking about the car sex movie, right?
Yeah, car sex. That's why I rewatched it today. My opinion went way up.
Crash. Man, that is a wild movie.
Well,
Elias Koteas was robbed for best supporting actor.
That was a good
Nathan, game. For real, I bought Crash on Criterion, the car sex one.
Me too. I sent really you guys good? A picture of it earlier.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yes.
I've not actually watched the movie.
It looks great. Have you seen it before?
No, I have not. This
oh, it's a wild movie. Do you like Cronenberg?
I do.
Okay. It's out there even for Cronenberg because it's out there in a different way. It's very strange, but I think it's a fascinating movie.
There you go. T-Man, let me hand you your episode back as I hijacked it to talk about something that's not even.
Yeah, you talked about a movie with the same title. That counts.
It was close enough since it was the same title. But yeah, I think that was a good pick, Gabe. And it was just I think Crash is a, it's just an example of kind of what happened to the Academy over the last 20 years of the issue movie. That's what they love now is the issue movie. That's what I've been searching for this entire episode is what's that called? It's the issue movie. Finally got it. Okay. So now we are on to Wes, I believe. Wes, take your pick for best of the last 33 years.
Man, I've got three movies here as well. And T-Man, are you nervous?
What do you think I'm nervous. I'm gonna do this time? I'm excited. I don't know what the hell you're going to do.
I think he's gonna
let's shake things up.
No all right, here we go. Ready? I'm gonna play a little. I'm gonna play something real quick. Are y'all ready? See if y'all can hear this.
Yeah.
To burst thing, except to say, I'm the king of the world.
Oh no!
That's what I thought he was gonna pick.
No.
Titanic. Let's go.
No.
Yes.
How?
I argued pro Titanic.
Yes. I had to go with Titanic.
Titanic's awesome.
It was honestly between Unforgiven, No Country for Old Men, and Titanic for me. Titanic,
Unforgiven,
lackluster script. Let's be honest; it does not have the best dialogue.
That script is awful. What
that's
is
not
James?
What James Cameron is.
Are you saying
for.
Draw me like one of your little French girls isn't poetry?
Like it's really
say
bad.
That line a lot.
I mean, it's close. But those were the three I was debating against. But you've got one of my all-time favorite directors. You've got my favorite actor as the lead. You have a real-life event that, for some reason, even before this movie came out and back in 1997, I was interested in. I think Mom was interested in it and other disasters, and I just kind of grew up learning and reading about these. And so I was already invested in this story. And when I went to go see Titanic, I saw it in theaters three times as a kid. What was I? I was 14 or 15 years old, you know, when the movie came out. And it was this particular movie for me that movies went from just a strictly entertainment in my mind to they actually evoke emotions in me. And it was the first time a movie had ever evoked an emotion, like as a young guy. Like I thought about the movie for days and days afterwards because I was very disturbed with the amount of loss of those people and how such a tragic event. And I don't know why, it just had a profound effect on me as a young teen. And I think that's one of the reasons I've always loved this movie is because of that. And because it's still got some pretty funny stuff in it. It holds up extremely well when it gets to all the action parts and stuff like that. Yes, the love story is really cheesy in it, but it also made you care about those characters. And I want to do a full Titanic episode as one of my choices sometimes. And maybe we can even do that this Christmas because for whatever reason, this kind of feels like a Christmas season, type movie to me. But and the last thing I can say is I really don't think there can be any argument. It's literally the biggest movie of our lifetimes, like all of our lifetimes. There is no bigger movie that has come out and has shaped the cultural landscape as much as Titanic did. I mean, the ticket sales, the merchandise. It's not a sequel or anything like that. And I just loved as it made, I think, $12 or $18 million or something like that opening weekend after they spent, what, $200 million on in the late 90s. And every week for months, it just made more and more and more money. Just a great story, you know, all around. So it's my favorite of all the best pictures, and that's why I'm going with it.
You missed it earlier, Wes. I actually argued pro Titanic because it does encompass what it sounds dumb, but it does encompass what I feel like the best picture should do. Like it was word of mouth. Everybody from every neck of the woods when it came out was talking about it because it broke boundaries and it got bigger every week, just like you said, because more people, I remember I went and saw it twice. Like, I mean,
yeah, me too.
There's it's not my, like, I'm not going to plop in Titanic, and it probably isn't in my top half of movies I'd pop in and watch today, but it is what best picture should represent. And I said that earlier, weirdly, and I used it as an example.
No, I'll just jump in here real quick with my Titanic thoughts, because I want to save a lot of, we'll save a lot of them for the episode. But there's just a couple of things. First, the movie is really hokey, but I kind of like divide up into two halves. The first half I don't think is good. The second half is amazing. Like, I kind of call it like apex studio filmmaking. It really doesn't get better than the Titanic sinking. Like, I watched it a few months ago, and it's just amazing, that set and what James Cameron can pull off. And also, second is, I think that it is a really good pick, though, because I agree with you all and gave what kind of what you're saying is, when you think of the best pictures of the last 33 years, you know, a lot of way Titanic is kind of the personification of what we want the best picture to be. We want it to be a really well-made movie that people love and can stand up through the test of time. And when the best picture is at its best, I think that's what it's winning. And like I said earlier, I think For whatever reason, I think whenever these great movies win Best Picture, it just adds a little something extra to them. And I think it adds a little something extra to Titanic.
And when it wins, it makes people want to go out and see movies. It makes movies popular again. And I don't know. I always root for that. It's weird. Just because I love movies.
One thing I forgot to mention is another reason why I hold it in such esteem is because I've seen the Ghosts of the Abyss documentary and watched quite a few interviews. And I think there's even a documentary on Disney Plus about Titanic. And just the meticulous, crazy nature of James Cameron, of the lengths that he goes to bring his films to life. I mean, he literally built a gigantic portion of the actual ship. And he literally went down to the real Titanic and shot footage of it, of how it was back whenever they were shooting this in, I think, what, 95 and 96. He actually went down and shot the real Titanic underwater to do, you know, the opening scene. Now, it wasn't all real footage, but there was real footage sprinkled in. And then he does that fade whenever you're looking at the old bow, and then it just kind of fades to, you know, back in time to where it's like the new ship and stuff. There's just so many little aspects of that I just appreciate so much.
Yeah, one of the things constellations wrong, though. You all know about that, right? He got the constellations in the sky wrong. Neil deGrasse Tyson yelled at him for it, and he went back and did it for the re-release, and he fixed it.
Nah, see?
He is that kind of fastidious that he would do that. But that's where that attention to technical detail does matter, because one of the things that's fascinating about the Titanic, particularly if you were someone who didn't really know anything about it, and, like, again, it's the Titanic. Did any of us expect, when that much money was, no pun intended, sunk into it, like, when it was going to come out. Everyone assumed it was going to be a massive bomb, right? It's like, how, who's going, who's that interested in
really Titanic?
I mean, I don't know that anyone thought going, and in fact, I could be wrong on this, but I thought that it didn't even come in number one the weekend it came out. I think it was the Tomorrow Never Dies, right? Like the James Bond movie. Mm-hmm. Like if it wasn't, it was very close. So it was looking like, oh yeah, it's going to have a weekend and make like $20 million and then it's going to just bomb horribly. And then it was word of mouth. But one of the things he does in that movie is all of that stuff with Bill Paxton and them going to the bottom and showing the recreation of the Titanic is it gives you a very clear map for exactly how that ship is going to break, what's going to happen to it. And so logistically speaking, even when he's just showing you certain parts of the ship, and you're right, T-Man, like the second half of that film is very harrowing and wrenching, and watching the people who aren't getting out of the ship, like the mother tucking her children into bed and stuff like that. Like all that works. And yet at that same time, you are perfectly oriented to know what's happening. Okay, it's going to break like this. It's going to fall like this. Like he's giving you all that up front with what seems to be just a lot of exposition, but he makes the exposition interesting too with, you know, they're looking for the jewel. They're, you know, they have to go find this lady and stuff like that. There are things about the movie I'm not crazy about, but it's a great example of how to make this big entertainment about a subject matter that wouldn't normally be seen as, oh, you know what's going to really bring the kids in? The Titanic sinking.
And all of that, and you know, all of that sadness, you know, especially at the end over that Celtic James Horner score. Yeah, and it's one of my all-time favorite scores. Now, I'm not a My Heart Will Go On Celine Dion fan, but the scene where Rose is being lowered and it goes slow motion and you got the flares going off and Leonardo DiCaprio and Billy Zane are watching her go down and she's looking around and seeing all the pain and sadness and everybody saying their last goodbyes. That is such an emotional scene because of that music. That music is so gut-wrenchingly sad. And I think that's a very underrated aspect that gets lost with Titanic a lot is just how beautiful James Horner's scores were.
Yeah, it's a great...
See, man, yes. You better take it away from me. I could talk Titanic a lot.
All right, well, we're gonna hold any more Titanic thoughts until our Titanic episode. But lots to talk about with that movie for sure. All right, so let's go with, I think I have the last pick here. And, you know, I've been waffling between two different picks. And so I've got worse next. And I think I'm going to go with a pick that I didn't think I would at first. But I think it actually is a more interesting conversation. The original pick I was going to go with would be Goodfellas losing to Dance with Wolves. But we all know that that's a clear-cut case, the Academy just getting it outright wrong. And badly wrong, that I don't think there's tons to talk about. But actually, so the pick I'm actually going to go make is in 1998. It was 1998 film year, but it was the 1999 Oscars. And this is the year that Shakespeare in Love beat Saving Private Ryan, which is truly just an abomination. And it is one of the most fascinating instances of a movie upset happening because this was the year that everybody thought Saving Private Ryan was going to win. It is one of the most culturally significant movies of the last 30 years. It had all the momentum. It had won all the precursor awards. I think it won the DGA, the PGA, the Golden Globes. And Shakespeare in Love, where while it was a popular movie, not a lot of people gave it a ton of, you know, a chance to win, but except for one thing. This was Harvey Weinstein at his dirtiest, at the apex of him doing the so-called dirty campaigning.
Maybe not his dirtiest.
And he
no, that's true.
Well, not literally true.
Yeah.
But this was when he pulled out all the stops. And it was such a upset that people were just shocked in the Academy Awards. And I think it's just a travesty, honestly, because I just do not think Shakespeare in Love holds up at all. I don't think it has any cultural significance. I don't think anybody's watching it. In a lot of ways, it was the precursor to another movie like that called Coda that nobody is interested in.
I'm going to go ahead and say it right now while you're doing this. I like Shakespeare in Love. Now, do I think it should have beat Saving Private Ryan? No. But I'm watching Shakespeare. I've watched it again. It's fun. It's not like a fun movie won.
No, it's not fun. First off, it's about Shakespeare like
falling in love, but it's funny. It's congratulations. Have some fun. Watch Shakespeare in Love. Like,
I don't want fun Shakespeare in Love. I want him depressed and dour and writing his plays. No, but on to Saving Private Ryan, once again, it's one of the great war movies of all time. I just rewatched it the other weekend and it still holds up magnificently. You can literally see that every war film copied Saving Private Ryan after it. It is so culturally like influential. It's kind of amazing. And so for it to lose Best Picture, it's just kind of like, it's just one of the most obvious examples of the Academy getting it wrong. Maybe the most obvious example, honestly. So
it's almost
what are
like
your
a King's Speech thing.
there's another one, but I think
I'll give you my controversial
honestly, Wes,
take.
That's a good point. That's a good point because that's another Weinstein. That was like him. That was his last gasp. This was like the beginning, and that was the end of his campaigning.
I was mad. This is when I watched, you know, the Oscars regularly. I would look forward to them. I mean, look at all the movies that are winning around this time. I mean, it was
big. 90s Oscars were big.
Big. I mean, I loved it, and I couldn't wait for it to come on. And I remember Shakespeare in Love winning, and I was just kind of blown away. And I was,
yeah,
you know, this is just a couple of years later after Titanic. So I'm 16 at that time.
It's
16,
one year
17,
later, it's
I'm
the
like,
movie after Titanic. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it is. So, yeah, I would have been 16. And even then thinking, what on earth?
Really, the critics knew of this movie at that time, even by the time that it like rolls around. I think I'd seen it before it won. But even the movies that aren't on the list there, 98 was another pretty good movie year. And honestly, I don't know how other people feel. I really wanted to see The Truman Show on that list.
Great movie.
And Truman Show
that's
is
number
like 10
two,
times
yeah. Yeah,
the movie.
Yeah, that's number two.
That and I mean, now I'll give you my personal opinion, which is probably also a hot take, is I don't even think Saving Private Ryan was the best war film that was in those five nominees. But I think
that was my hot take. I'm in the same box as you. It's not one of my favorite, but after rewatching it, I do fully agree with T-Man that it did influence like every war movie from that point forward. So I do understand its significance. But I've never been a huge fan of Saving Private Ryan.
Every war film literally looks like Saving Private Ryan afterwards.
Oh, it does. And I love it.
Thin Red Line is better.
Thin Red Line's a great movie. I wouldn't be as upset if that movie won. I wouldn't be as upset if Truman Show. I don't think they should have. But Shakespeare in Love, that is a travesty. That is a
movie. It's a fine movie, but it's not a movie that belongs amongst
I do not think
movies.
It's good at all. I don't think
I just
it's
don't
fine.
Like all. Listen, me and Tommy have had this argument for years. I just don't think it deserves all the hate. It's not a terrible movie. No. It's like what happens in the Derby when this little horse that shouldn't have even been in the Derby wins, and all the other horses break their legs and it wins. Like that shouldn't happen. But you shouldn't yell at the horse for that.
It would be like this is the equivalent of being like Kate and Leopold winning best picture.
It's that not that
Jackman. That is the same thing. It's the equivalent. It is not a good movie. It does not hold up. And
people are like force hating Shakespeare in Love just because it won. It shouldn't be held to that standard. It was just
well,
a fun.
That's,
it wasn't
yeah,
nominated.
That's
the
Academy's
irony
fault.
Is if it wasn't nominated and it hadn't won, it probably would have been this little sleeper movie that everyone talked about and enjoyed, and it would have a better standing now than it does because it won the award.
I agree.
This is the year that I agree exactly. Like for whatever reason, like this is the one that people latch on. It made people, I remember my household, me and my dad were visibly angry. Like I was angry. I'm still angry at this.
I can tell.
Pissed.
Yeah. I was kind of happy that year. It was pretty good choice.
No, it was not a pretty good choice. Bad choice. Here's my pick, Gabe.
But that 98's another year I thought had a lot of great films in it and just some weird choices. Like, I think Elizabeth is fine.
Yeah.
I do like Elizabeth. It's okay.
Yeah, it's a good movie, but there were lots of other movies that I thought were much better in 1998 that weren't even on here. But, you know.
What about Life is Beautiful?
Urban Legend. Talk about heck that. Yeah.
Life is Beautiful is
Urban,
awesome.
Yeah.
Wasn't Urban Legend 98?
It sure was, yeah. Urban Legend, Vampires, yeah, that's Bride of Chucky. I don't know why those were not the nominees. They probably were over at Fangoria. But
and then, like, this isn't even talking about Best Picture anymore, but Robert Benigni winning Best Actor over Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks, that's probably his best performance, okay. Honestly. I'm just going to say.
When I talked about the New Zealand people, Roberto Benigni literally crawled over people's shoulders to get out of the aisle.
He is standing on people's chairs. I really think they just gave him that award just so they would see him do something weird. Because they all knew what was coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was a crazy.
That was the year that I think, isn't that when Jim Carrey got up there and said, really, honestly, it's just an honor to be nominated, and then yes. Pretended to cry.
That was good. That's probably one of the most memorable Oscar years, honestly.
Even without a slap.
Oh my gosh. I just realized yeah. Jeffrey Rush and Colin Firth are in Shakespeare in Love. Yes. Freaking King's Speech alums.
Weinstein, too. No They're wonder. Back. This is the beginning of it.
Wow. Now that makes me dislike Shakespeare in Love even more.
Matt, what are your thoughts on this?
So I don't know, probably 5 years ago, I did a top 10 or a top 30 countdown of my favorite 90s movies. And I went back and watched a bunch that I'd never seen before. Shakespeare in Love was one of them. And it was a nothing movie to me. Like I didn't dislike it, but I was like, yeah. Really? This was the best picture?
No.
So I don't hate it, but yeah, it was not.
It would be it. Yeah. Right. If it didn't win against an all time great war movie, some think it's the greatest war movie of all time, at least one of the most influential. And then it also beat out other really good. I don't know. It's just that one. It just does not deserve it, and just pisses me off.
Where's Half Baked? That's what I want to know.
Something About Mary.
Hey, I would have put
Impact,
like
Armageddon,
Bay Pig in the City. Yeah, Pleasantville was a great movie.
Armageddon, Mighty Joe Young. Mighty
Dark
Joe
City,
Young was right
but
there.
They would
the
have
taking.
Never nominated a movie like Dark City, but
hey, Dark City's awesome.
That's one of my favorite sci-fi movies. Yeah,
that's a good movie.
Yeah. So I do have to drop here pretty soon, guys. So I know we had talked about there's one year that I haven't seen a single nominee from. You guys want to so before I drop, I see if you guys wanted to re-guess that, and then you can berate me for not have seeing some of these movies.
I think I guessed. What did I guess? I think I guessed 2004 or 1992.
Yeah.
92. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I stick with those
guesses. My guesses. I'm trying to find them.
I don't know.
You guessed like 2006 was what you picked, Gabe.
I was going to say like 2004, something weird.
No, I said, I had 2004 and 2006. And I'm going to stick, I know he's seen, I feel like he's seen Departed for sure. So 2004 would have to be my choice.
Okay. So I've never seen The Aviator. I've never seen Finding Neverland, but I have seen Ray Sideways and Million Dollar Baby. The year is 1992. I have never seen The Unforgiven, A Few Good Men.
Oh, wow.
Howard's End, The Crying Game, or Scent of a Woman. I've never seen
that's a good movie year, too.
Yeah, but they are movies. My thinking was that you probably weren't watching movies around that time, Matt. Is that right?
Yeah. I was 10. That's probably true. I was watching Home Alone.
And those are not movies that you're likely to go back and look, except for Unforgiven.
Unforgiven and A Few Good Men.
Well,
they're on TV all the time.
I would like to see both of those. Yeah.
Did you not turn on TNT ever, Matt?
Well, like, yeah, A Few Good Men was on it like every weekend.
For me, I was watching A League of Their Own and Aladdin, Home Alone.
Yeah. None of these are really, maybe Son of a Woman, but none of these are movies that are not family movies.
Right.
No.
Right.
Well, I would say Scent of a Woman, though, I love because it has one of the all-time Al Pacino crazy performances. And just the end where he
yelling.
Does that speech.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. I could watch that on YouTube every day.
He only screams more in, what's that, The Devil's Advocate, I think.
That's true. I'll take a flamethrower to this place.
Matt, you know, for real, again, I mean, Unforgiven for me, that was the one of the movies I was wrestling with to pick.
Me too.
It is my all-time favorite Western. It is a fantastic, fantastic movie. And A Few Good Men is my favorite courtroom drama. And team is not big on courtroom dramas, but just Tom Cruise's performance right up against Jack Nicholson. I mean, Demi Moore is great in it.
Yeah.
Kevin Bacon's great in it. It is
all
a
five
great,
of those are actually good movies. Howard
not
Jeff's
my favorite genre,
stuffy,
but that's a great movie. Yeah, that's a classic. Yeah,
it's the best of those of anything for kind sure. of courtroom. I like The Verdict a lot too. That's a really good one. But anyway, those two for me, they are must watches and must watch. Like, you will enjoy both, I think. So you got to watch them soon. And let us know what you
think
when you do. Like those two.
While you're watching those two great flicks, I'll be watching the end of Crash.
We've all got our assignments. I'm going to watch Coda, guys. Well, I'm not, but I'm going to say I am. And so Matt, I know you got to drop off. If you got to drop off, you know, please do whenever you need to. Guys, I know we had talked about, we've run a little long, so I just want to end it real soon, but we were going to talk about what we think were the best and worst picks. And honestly, I think they're all best and worst. So I don't think we have to vote on those. But I did want to ask you all, are there any movie years, is there any that we just didn't mention? Is there anything that just jumps out? He's like, I've got to mention this before we
I do have one. Up. So two things. One, in 2018... Which, hold on, I get the year of the movie and the year of the Oscars incorrect. So the year that The Shape of Water won.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
2017 year, 18
I'm sorry,
Oscars, I think.
2018 year, 2019 Oscars. I'm looking at the list. It's Vice, A Star is Born, Roma, The Favorite, Bohemian Rhapsody, Black Klansman, Black Panther, and Green Book. Like, none of those should have won. I think it should have been Eighth Grade or Hereditary, like they're going to nominate Hereditary.
What? No, they were not going to. Yeah. Eighth Grade?
No. Eighth Grade is one of the all-time best coming-of-age stories. So that's my first hot take. But the other is, and we have to say it, and I feel like this is a cliche, but I love Forrest Gump. And at the time, I thought, yeah, that's the best movie of the year. And I think I enjoy it more than Pulp Fiction, but I think Pulp Fiction should have won because of what it did for film as a whole after that.
Yeah, that was a travesty. And
I
actually enjoyed watching Pulp Fiction more.
A lot more than Forrest Gump as well.
My hot take, my only hot take is 2019 is by far the best year of the last 10 years, in my opinion.
I think I had that as my best year too. 2019.
Game was so high on 2019 that
I wanted to do a whole episode on it. A year later,
Gabe wanted, this was a real proposal. Gabe said, let's do a top 10 of 2019. Mind you, it was 2021.
And
we're like, what do you mean?
Laugh me out of the room. I have begged to do that episode. One of those nominees is fantastic.
Why would we do it? That doesn't, anyway.
Because I want to talk about those movies.
That was one of the very few episode vetoes that we've done. On Real Talk. Most of the time, we just let people just do whatever.
Real Talk.
That one was
too.
A little, hey, Gabe, in like 5 years,
tell.
It'll be fine.
You can tell by the quality of the episode.
I mean, you guys did Evil Robots, and you couldn't get
right.
rid of this.
I got Evil Robots through, and I couldn't do Best of 2019.
Well, I think it's the only one we have vetoed. Usually, we give people a lot.
It's the only one that
let me throw a year out there. Not to bring this back to the topic that we're talking about, but I'll do that. 2008, I thought was a pretty, here's another case. 2008 to me was a pretty good film year, I thought. But it's not represented in those five movies at all, in my opinion. I thought Slumdog Millionaire was fine. I mean, it was okay. I hated The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. And
that
usually that
sucks.
Kind of weird stuff is my bag, and I love David Fincher.
Does not hold up at all.
Frost Nixon, TV movie. Milk, TV movie. The Reader,
that's a bad movie.
It is a bad movie.
Yeah, really bad.
And so those are just a sad lump of movies, if you ask me. The Dark Knight, I mean, you know, there were a lot of really good movies that came out in 2008. A lot of them were more the popular mainstream films. None of them are represented here. And these are movies that I just couldn't care less about. It's a depressing lump of movies.
It's a depressing list. And Dark Knight really changed. It broke the Oscars back because they tried to change things and they've never been able to recover. But here's the thing also. So I don't want to be too hard on the Academy, because if you look at the 90s era films, like we've done a lot tonight, and then you look at the past 10 years, once again, you really can't blame the Academy, because it's Hollywood making the movies. If they don't have the movies to choose from, what are they going to do? Like the 90s movies, I think they did in 2008. So much better. I think
the movies were there. Most of the years I have a problem with is where this is.
I don't think it was as strong as the 90s, though. Maybe it was not as bad as now. No, but
look at 2008 there, Tommy. Look at that list of movies, except for Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which is them trying to do the Forrest Gump thing, right? It's like, it's a Forrest Gump for like depressives. And this whole list of movies here, they are exactly what you talk about. The important message movie that just isn't, you know, it is surface level, exactly what you expect and nothing else.
Yeah, it's that issue movie that just doesn't hold up and you can tell what they're doing. Like, it's so obvious.
Yeah. Another one I thought really, you talk about the TV movies, 2001, A Beautiful Mind winning. I think that's the definition.
That was my next pick.
Yeah.
Just it doesn't hold up.
It's whatever. It's a fine movie. And if it were a literal TV movie, you know, the HBO had some put it out, I think everybody would be happy with it. I enjoyed watching it, but I haven't thought about that movie an instant. And every other movie on there is better, in my opinion.
I love Fellowship of the Ring and Moulin Rouge, but it was like they were waiting. But yes, if I went with a movie that I saw, Beautiful Mind was going to be my pick for worst movie.
Yeah, and we have to
I hate that I say that because I'm a huge Ron Howard fan. Yeah. I love and this is in my opinion, and the reason I hate that it won so bad is because Ron Howard has done every other movie he's done since then. I like more than A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah, well, also,
what's that movie where they're racing in cars? Even here recently,
Rush.
Rush. I even like Rush better than Beautiful Mind.
It's just, I don't think it holds up. It just doesn't have a lot of cultural significance. And the one I was going to mention, I think this early 2000s run is pretty bad too, after Gladiator, is when Chicago wins for 2003 Oscars. That's another one that just doesn't hold up. Nobody thinks about
York,
it.
Gangs in New York will hold up for a lot longer. Lord of the Rings, Two Towers will hold up.
Yeah, they just had a bad run there after Gladiator.
Well, we have to mention The English Patient, right? Not in a positive way, but just that,
I'm not a huge English Patient fan. No, I'm not.
No, I'm not. But it's one of those movies. There's some good stuff in it, but it's long. It's a little pretentious. It smacks of that. This is a movie that older voters pick because it reminds them of a kind of film that in some ways never really existed. You know, a lot of the older films have much more energy than this movie has. And it beat Fargo. That's the problem.
Yeah, what I was going to say. It should not have beat Fargo. Far superior movie.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Well, that's an interesting... Go ahead, Gabe.
Nate just went down my exact list.
Gabe, I've noticed every time we're on these shows, we have sometimes we line up, you know. I'm not an Army Hammer fan, but, you know.
But I am.
Gabe is. So that's where we know you are.
You know, sometimes we hit, sometimes we miss. But you literally went down the list of things I was thinking.
That's amazing. And the final thing I'll say about English Patient is it was almost kind of the inverse of what's happened now with the indie films that are winning a lot. You know, English Patient was that big epic, you know, and that was the Oscar movie for a long time, was the big epic. You know, think of Ben-Hur and Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah.
Those are the movies that won. I think that kind of it rode that wave of reminiscing.
It wasn't a sniff on those movies. It was more like a Dr. Zhivago. Yeah.
And yeah, I think I've watched that. And in fairness, the other reason I didn't mention is I watched it entire. I think I watched it too early in life to appreciate.
Yes, I have watched it again, and it holds up a little better. I just don't think it's great, and nothing compared to Fargo for sure.
Yeah.
So, but no, I think this was a lot of fun. I think we had a lot of great.
Just mention one last thing. And I mean,
go ahead.
I think just for the listener's perspective, because they might wonder why it wasn't mentioned, and no one mentioned Schindler's List. I'm not saying on the bad side, but on the good side. Any thoughts about that?
I think that was Tommy's runner up.
Yeah, I would have picked that second after Silence of the Lambs. They were really close. I mean, I think I think Schindler's List is a masterpiece. So it's another one of these movies that I think are very culturally significant for a lot of reasons. You know, of course it really highlighted the Holocaust in a new way for a new generation. It holds up really well, I think. And I mean, it's a movie that it's an issue movie, but because Spielberg is such an amazing director, and I know that I don't want this to sound weird or anything, but he makes it entertaining. And that's what I meant earlier when I said Hollywood needs to make entertaining movies. You can still make issue movies that have important issues or causes, but they still have cinematic value and language, and they still feel vibrant and you're in it. And she
balanced despair and hope in that film. And
I think that's my problem, like that I had with Matt's pick. Like, I like 12 Years a Slave a lot, but Schindler's List does,
yeah, it's, you know, the much
it better. It does
much
it's
better
superior
movie.
Version of it. Yeah. But I like 12 Years a Slave. It's the next best thing. But and, but for a hard topic movie that I would revisit, I guess I would revisit both of those, but I would much, there's a much better chance I'd revisit Schindler's List.
Exactly. Schindler's List to me is how you, if you want to make an issue movie vibrant in something that people are going to really take something out of, Schindler's List is, you can't beat it because the cinematic language used in it is so like high level. A-plus yeah. level filmmaking.
And I'm going to amend a little bit to say this, I think, would be my pick for the best of the winners since 1990. The Lord of the Rings, because I love that series and that they actually, even though it wasn't perfect adaptation and it was a representative of three films, that was my favorite, like, Oscar moment of, yes, this won. I'm so happy. I literally, like, elated that it won. But I think, you know, if I'm going to go out there, I'm going to say Schindler's List was probably the best of the winners from 90 until now.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Nathan, I agree with you. I did the same thing. I did a movie I love, but if I was picking the best, it would have clearly been Coda because I mean, that's the pinnacle of movie-making history, but I zigged just like you did.
But like I said, we could talk about this all night, I think, and not come to a consensus one way or the other. But I do appreciate all you guys on here, your final thoughts. Is there anything final, keep it to one sentence, though, that you want to say about the last 33 years at Oscars?
I'm the king of the world.
Nice, Wes. Nathan?
I got nothing. I've already said it all.
That was one sentence. That was perfect. Gabe?
Freedom. I don't know. I didn't have anything. I just did a Braveheart thing.
Wait, you just did Braveheart?
Well, I didn't want to do the whole thing again.
The whole soliloquy. Like,
I didn't want to do. Nobody wanted that, so that's all
I did. Nobody wanted that. That's fair enough. I don't have anything other than that's a wrap.